Morning, Llewellyn.
Morning, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm
Thanks,
good.
thanks, thanks.
And Llewellyn?
Morning, Louis.
Morning, morning.
How are you?
Good.
I can see that you are fresh.
Always.
I can see, okay.
Capello, is there something you need to check with me?
Hi, Llewellyn.
Yes, Capello.
Joshua will be sharing the screen and the document from our side. I hope you can spot him there.
I see, B. Joshua. Now, Joshua will be presenting.
Yeah, he will be presenting and sharing the
Thank
document.
You.
So if
Thank
you can
you
just,
very much.
Yeah, help him to.
Sasha, are you? Sasha, FFC, are you there?
Morning, how are you?
Morning.
Hi, Sasha.
Yes, morning, Llewellyn, I'm here.
Will you be flighting your presentation from your side?
I can do that, yes, unless you want to do it from that side. I'm not, whatever's easier.
I prefer that you flight it on your side. I take it we'll take FSC first as per the program, and then move to AXA. I have enabled my screen to share, so you shouldn't have a problem of seeing it from your side.
Okay.
If you run into problems, I'll do it from my side.
Okay, no problem. All
right. See you later.
Okay.
Morning, Llewellyn.
Honorable Shabalala, how are you doing?
I'm good, and you?
Not complaining, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There we go, Sasha. We can all see your presentation. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Can you remove it for now?
Okay.
Morning.
Thanks. Morning.
How are you, Secretary?
I'm fine, Honorable. Yourself?
I'm okay.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Morning, Honorable Suela.
Morning, Honorable Chavala. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm okay.
That's better.
Sure.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, good people.
Morning.
Morning.
Hey, how are you doing this morning? Still surviving?
Yes, we are surviving.
No, that's great. We will not save until all of us are saved.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
Lol Tando and Llewellyn, good morning.
Morning, Chairperson. How are you doing?
No, I'm good.
Morning, thank you.
All right. So you'll have to help me with the time.
Yes, Chairperson. We still have 4 minutes.
Yeah, so that we don't go beyond the allocated times. Just some few minutes to go now.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the both portfolio and select committees on education. Chairperson, it's 9 o'clock now. I will hand over to you, Chairperson, and I'll just put the agenda on the screen.
Yes, good morning, honorable members. This joint meeting of the Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sports, Arts and Culture, together with the Portfolio Committee. So this is a briefing of Parliament committees on basic education. But we'll be looking today at matters related to expenditure patterns on infrastructure. We all know that, during the COVID lockdown first, the first 2 months, there was vandalism of structure. So honorable members, this is the agenda. Is any mover for adoption of this agenda before we even start rushing into the presentation?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Honorable yes. Sir, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Any seconder for the adoption of the agenda?
I second, Chair Shabalala.
Okay, Honorable Shabalala, second. Thanks a lot. Let me take this opportunity to welcome also the department and check if there are apologies with the people who are supposed to be in this meeting. Let's check. Are we actually even making a quorum for the meeting? Yeah, I think that would be very helpful. Over to you. Let's check with the Noel Tando. What's our quorum for the day?
Good morning, members and everyone present in the meeting. Chair, on the select committee side, we've got yourself, the chairperson. We've got Honorable Luthuli. We've got Honorable Baha. We've got Honorable Lehihi. Honorable Ndongeni will be joining us later because she's still attending another meeting. I've got three apologies, Chair. One from Honorable Gillion, Honorable Maleka, and Honorable Christians. They are all having prior commitments, Chair, so they won't be able to join the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Noel Tando. On the NA side,
thank you, Chairperson. We have present for the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Siwela, Honorable Malachi, Honorable Morovachetla, Honorable Machezi, Honorable van der Walt, Honorable King, Honorable Ngobo. I do know that Honorable Aduns is busy logging in as we speak. I have an apology for the Chairperson, Honorable Ntabele. She's got a prior commitment this morning, but she'll try and join us a bit later. And then Honorable King has indicated that she may have to leave us at around 11 o'clock this morning. And then from the DBE side, Chair, I received apologies for both the Minister and Deputy Minister, who may will not be joining us this morning, also due to prior commitments. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala.
No.
Chairperson, I also just want to indicate.
Sorry?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I said Honorable Mashabela is present.
Oh, yes. Welcome, Honorable Mashabela.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Chairperson, I just want to indicate that Honorable Sukas from the National Assembly is also present.
All right, thanks a lot. We do make a quorum for the meeting, and I welcome all members. I can see on the icon that there is, on the system that we do make a quorum for the meeting. DG, let me welcome you and give you an opportunity to tell us who is in the meeting, who forms part of your team. Thanks a lot. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. Chair, we have in the meeting Mrs. Nuka Deliwe, Chief Director for Strategic Planning. We have Dr. Jenny Joshua, the Chief Director in the Office of the Director General. We also have the Head of Internal Audit in the Department, Mrs. Muller. We also have Mr. Mahada, who's responsible for Parliamentary Business Processes, Mr. Ntwana, who's responsible for Stakeholder Relations. We've got the acting Chief Financial Officer and the acting branch head for the administration branch, Mrs. Nzeta Mulelekwa. Chair, those are, I don't know whether I've left anyone, Neo Mulai, Neo from the ministry, is also part of this meeting. The acting DDG for Business Processes is also part of the meeting, is the Shalo Naiken. And those are the officials from the Department of Basic Education that are part of the meeting. Just to confirm, Chair, that and Ms. Mutlala, I've seen from her office in Parliament, she's also part of the meeting, to confirm that both the Deputy Minister and the Minister are not available for this meeting, Chair. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm done, Chair.
Thank you very much. And then from the Finance and Fiscal Commission, yeah, thanks a lot, DG. They've been we're waiting today at least to be briefed about some of the things that are really worrying me in terms of school infrastructure at DG. It's matters related to math schools, the issues related to sanitation in schools, and delivery of water, sustainable water, delivery of water in the schools. COVID has actually exposed some of the shortcomings that we have in terms of dealing with school infrastructure. We are dependent on other people to implement our programs for us. I mean, as the Department of Basic Education. What is this that we can do to ensure that we actually take charge of this process and ensure that whatever product that we get, it talks to the amount of investment in terms of money that was put forward for those implementations. So through this briefings on expenditure patterns, particularly in respect to infrastructure, DG, including the MST. Of course, we're also interested in knowing what are the budget allocations to provinces. But at the same time, the provincial education departments are not, you know, the provinces are not playing the role that they're supposed to play in terms of aiding or assisting us in the finances of some of these programs. So we'll hear from you in terms of what will be the way forward how are we going to ensure that we get value for our money in terms of infrastructure and other education-related matters. I'll give over to you to lead us in the briefings. Over to you, Elvis. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We really appreciate the opportunity to be part of this meeting. And as you correctly highlighted, Chair, I think you spot on one of the areas of concerns are indeed infrastructure funding and infrastructure delivery. And I'm happy that it comes from the chair of the select committee of the NCOP. The concerns that we have raised, Chair, is that with the advent particularly of the conditional grant, which is ACB and EIG, the allocation from the equitable share for infrastructure has been dwindling to a point where some provinces are allocating zero. And I think it's a cause for concern. As we all know, conditional grants are nationally initiated funds for a fixed-term policy intervention. They are not supposed to be, running throughout, but these are policy intervention for a short term. And depending entirely on nationally initiated funding on a short-term basis, it's not only risky, but it's also not sustainable for the system, and particularly with respect to infrastructure. But the other point that I want to raise, which I'm gleaning quickly through what the FFC will be presenting to us, is that, Chair, you'd be aware, as well as members of the portfolio committee, that infrastructure and including conditional grants such as math, science and technology have not been saved from the budget cuts that we have seen in recent times. Infrastructure has suffered the most cuts in terms of the budget, and to complicate matters, you would recall that even the procurement of COVID essentials has been shouldered by the education infrastructure grant. And that means that going forward, you've got very little or nothing for infrastructure rollout. And maybe those are just the preliminary comments that I would offer now, but also to say that the presentation that will also be received from the FFC will also reflect on funding in terms of equity. I think there are about three provinces that are not funding in terms of the norms that are determined by the national department. We've been in ongoing engagements with provinces, minister writing to MECs, making them aware that they are not allocating funds per learner allocation in terms of national norms and standards for school funding as determined in terms of the norms. And the response of provinces has been that they've been pushed to the fringes by budget cuts, and budget cuts actually account for the reduced Pelena funding that we see in some of the countries. And the likelihood is that the situation might actually affect more provinces going forward, because budget cuts are continuing. We've had more budget cuts even this year, and for the next financial year and the MTF, the budget cuts are likely to continue and increase. So the situation is likely to be dire. But also to appreciate and confirm the point that you have made, that in terms of provision of water, to some extent sanitation, the difficulty that we have is that we now also have to depend on municipalities who are water authorities in their own right. And many municipalities, as we know, have either suffered from recent droughts or don't have capacity to even provide water to municipalities, in some cases not unable to provide the requisite services that are required for sanitation. So that's the difficulty that we find ourselves in. But Chair, maybe in the interest of time, I could just offer those initial remarks and then participate as colleagues from the FFC and the Auditor General will be presenting. We expect the AG to give the status of the regularity audit. There's some improvements in the sector, but there's some stagnation in others, including the Department of Basic Education. But also the last part of the audit would also be the a special report number one, which the President requested the Auditor General to audit all procurement of COVID essentials. Some of this work, Chair, the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee has already started to deal with in terms of summoning provinces to come and explain. And so that's what we are also confirming from the AG. We have had interactions with the AG, and I think we will participate in the meeting as a team when called upon to do so. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members.
Yes, you welcome, DG. Yeah, we'll give over to the FFC to lead us to lead the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Good morning. I'm Elsbeth Rockman. I'm a Commissioner at the Fiscal and Finance Commission. You are aware that our Chairperson, Professor Daniel Plaik, has passed away last month, and he's really missed. The Deputy Chair, Professor Michael Sachs, is currently acting as Chairperson, and I'm apologising for his absence, but we also are presenting this morning to the Standing and Select Committees on Appropriations together with Finance on the medium-term budget statement presented by the Minister of Finance last week. But we agreed we must honour all our invitations, so we shared the responsibility today. Now, you are aware that the Finance and Fiscal Commission is established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution, and we function in terms of the FFC Act. And the Commission's focus is primarily on the equitable division of nationally collected revenue amongst the three spheres of government and any other financial and fiscal matters. Now, we appreciate the opportunity to present the FFC's analysis and the recommendations regarding the expenditure patterns in respect of infrastructure, specifically the CD program conditional grants, for example, MST, and equity in education, including the budget allocations to schools. But we also reflect on inclusive education, as this was a research topic included in our most recent annual submission on division of revenue. And we also briefly reflect on COVID-19 and its implications on the education sector. And as DG correctly pointed out, going forward, the budget allocations for the education sector is going to be under real pressure. Now, I'm joined by Ms. Sasha Peters, one of our senior researchers at the FFC, who will take us through the presentation. And Mr. Henry Eckstein is also present with us, and some of our other researchers. Now, school infrastructure has an essential role to play in addressing issues related to access and educational activity and quality. And the quality of our school infrastructure, especially in respect of physical conditions of school buildings, not only influence attendance and dropout rates, but it can be a motivational factor for teachers themselves. in our fiscal environment, social infrastructure are mainly funded by government through an array of conditional grants. In the education sector, the education infrastructure grant and the school infrastructure backlog grant are the key intergovernmental fiscal tools that fund our basic education infrastructure. Today's presentation focuses on the policy and service delivery context, including minimum norms and standards for school infrastructure, the set targets and progress against those targets, expenditure patterns relating to the ICD program and the EIG, as well as challenges with the service delivery model. Expenditure patterns relating to non-infrastructure conditional grants, equity in education, our research on inclusive education, and COVID, the COVID-19 pandemic and basic education. Now, allow me, Honourable Chair, to ask Ms. Sasha Peters to take us through the presentation, and we look forward to engaging in further discussion afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Rockman, and good morning, Chair, members of the committee, DG and other colleagues. So I will, as Commissioner Rockman indicated, I'll take you through our set of slides, and the next few slides will just sketch the policy and service delivery context in relation to education infrastructure. Now, the most important regulations in respect of educational infrastructure are the minimum norms and standards on school infrastructure, which were instituted in 2013. These are legally binding regulations that set the bar on what is legal and acceptable and what is not when it comes to educational infrastructure. Now, the norms and standards also compel the provincial MECs of education to report annually to the Minister of Basic Education on plans to address backlogs, even down to district level in the province, and thereafter to report on implementation. So these norms and standards envisage some intense thought and planning going into the plans presented by the 9 provincial MECs. And the annual reports by the MECs also have to include short, medium, and long-term plans on how backlogs will be addressed, along with the costing thereof. So a lot of weight and thought to be put into the addressing infrastructure backlogs within this sector. Now, looking at slide 6, this table provides an overview of the main requirements of the norms and standards on school infrastructure. And we also indicate there the anticipated dates for achievement of each requirement. So, for example, all inappropriate school buildings, that is those built from mud, asbestos, metal or wood, as well as schools that do not have access to any form of basic services, so a power supply, water supply or sanitation, those needed to have been addressed by 2016. Then by 2020, this year, all schools would, according to the timeframe set in the norms and standards, should have as a minimum availability of sufficient classrooms, access to not any form of power, but they need to have electricity, water and sanitation, electronic connectivity and perimeter security. And then in 3 years' time, by 2023, the targets in the norms and standards require that all schools need to have library and laboratory facilities. So those are the standards, the targets set out in the norms and standards. If we look at the next slide, slide 7, relative to those targets and deadlines, this slide then provides an indication of progress, and we note two key points here. Firstly, with respect to access to basic education infrastructure, there has been some progress between 2018 and 2019. If you look at the first figure on the slide, it shows the percentage of schools with pit latrines as the only source of ablution or sanitation. And the last two bars in that figure show that in 2018, 18.6% of all schools in South Africa had pit latrines as the only source of ablution, and this there has been an improvement in 2019, where we now have the lesser schools, 16% that are in this situation. Also, with respect to electricity, if you look at the second figure on that slide, the number of schools with access to electricity, without access to electricity, has also declined, and it's quite minimal now. So there has been some improvement, but we now need to focus on the quality of infrastructure as well. So yes, the fact that we've moved from 18.6% to 16% of schools having pit latrines as the only form of ablutions, you know, there's been movement today, but pit latrines is not indicative of access to quality, and more importantly, access to quality, safe infrastructure. So that's just a snapshot with respect to access to sanitation and electricity. If we move to the next slide, it just divides a look at the percentage of schools without access to sporting facilities, laboratory and library facilities. And with respect to lab facilities, as at 2019, 80% do not have such facilities, while 74% of schools as of 2019 do not have libraries. Then just over a third of schools do not have sports facilities, if you look at that, the first red bar in that figure there. So with respect to these forms of infrastructure, much work remains, and keeping in mind also that the time frame for achieving these milestones have been set for 2023. But we also wanted to just provide a province level view of the statistics that we've just showed you. So if you look at slide 9, this provides, the table there provides the percentage of schools without sport, lab and library facilities across the 9 provinces in both 2018 and then 2019. So all the 9 provinces have schools or do not have sport, lab and library facilities. But I think what this slide drives home is just the extent of lack in access in certain provinces. So for example, as of 2019, 65% of schools in the Eastern Cape do not have sports facilities. 94% of schools in the Limpopo province do not have access to laboratory facilities. 92% of schools in the Eastern Cape do not have library facilities. So there are certain provinces that are consistently more hard hit by lack of access than others. So much work still to be done with respect to these forms of infrastructure. So now that we have a bit of context, the next few slides present our analysis on the two big infrastructure-related conditional grants. It's the school's infrastructure backlog grants, which is used to fund the ACD program, and then secondly, the education infrastructure grant or EIG. So we start with the ACD program and the school's infrastructure backlog grant. Now, the Accelerated Schools Infrastructure Delivery Initiative, or ACD, this program was introduced in 2011-12, and it had three key aims, namely to eliminate backlogs in schools infrastructure, upgrade schools to ensure compliance with the infrastructure norms and standards, and then to eradicate inadequate, unsafe and poor physical infrastructure. Now, the fiscal instrument that is used to fund the rollout of the ACD program is the school's infrastructure backlogs grant. And this grant was set up to assist with meeting those three aims I just mentioned. And the intention was that the school's infrastructure backlogs grant would be a temporary intervention. And it was scheduled to end a couple of times and it was to be merged with the education infrastructure grant, but due to the performance of the grant and the fact that it had not met or completed what it was intended for, the life of this conditional grant has been extended a couple of times, and so we still have it as one of the grants. And I think one of the important aspects to keep in mind with our CD program and the school's infrastructure backlogs grant is that the conditional grant is an indirect conditional grant. But I'll go into the implications of that in a minute. The next slide illustrates the level of spending with respect to the school's infrastructure backlog grant. Since inception in 2011-12 up until 2019-20. And what the figure there shows is that it shows the total budget that was available for spending in a particular year, which is the blue bar. And it shows that it shows the budget relative to the total expenditure in that for a particular year, which is the red bar. So since 2011-12, when this grant was established, we've had a total of $16.8 billion being allocated to fund the RCD program through this particular conditional grant. And of that $16.8 billion, if we just look at spending, $12.8 billion has been spent. So over that period, in average terms, 70% of the available budget that is allocated via the school's infrastructure backlogs grant has been spent. So 70%, and what we need to do now is to look at that in relation to what type of delivery performance we've seen, which is on the next slide, slide 13. So we know spending means nothing unless it's accompanied by solid service delivery performance. So this slide here just provides a snapshot of the outputs of the RCD program. And we just need to note that the delivery data here is cited in cumulative terms. So since inception, since 2011-12 up until the present. So it's not annual performance. Now, if we look at the table on the top of the slide, it provides an aggregate picture of delivery that's taken place using the funds from the school's infrastructure backlogs grant. And if we take, for example, inappropriate schools, of the 510 baseline or the target that needed to be addressed since inception in 2011-12, up until the data which we have, which is up until December 2019, 46% of that target has been met. If we look at sanitation and based on data up until December 2019, there seems to have been overperformance. But when we look at the bottom table in that slide, we get a province by province view of delivery. And you'll see, again, performance is quite variable across the nine provinces. And just to point out that given the committee's oversight role here, the key question is whether, given that there's an average spending of 70%, whether the committee is fine with the delivery statistics that we see to date. But we also do know that when it comes to infrastructure projects, there are a number of challenges that characterize infrastructure spend and delivery, and we'd like to point out a few. So as mentioned earlier, looking at slide 14, as mentioned earlier, the school's infrastructure backlog grant is an indirect conditional grant. And what this means is that unlike direct conditional grants, indirect grants, the funding flows to the national sector department, and that national department, in this case, the Department of Basic Education, then has to spend the money on behalf of provinces. So FFC has done a bit of research and on these indirect grants in the past, and we've noted that it comes with certain disadvantages. And analysis also shows that, you know, the use of such grants when it should not be based on the perception that a national department is better able to spend and deliver services relative to provincial counterparts. We've analyzed a couple of indirect grants, and our analysis shows that, you know, it's not always the case that national departments automatically perform better. But more importantly, one of our key concerns with indirect grants is that it weakens, it has the potential to weaken the accountability chain. So consider, for example, that the Department of Basic Education administers the school's infrastructure backlogs grant on behalf of your provincial education departments. Now the DBE appoints implementing agents to manage the infrastructure funded through the grant. Those implementing agents use subcontractors, and those subcontractors in turn can rely on SMMEs to implement. So in the end, there are so many role players that it can end up blurring accountability. So for this model to work effectively, you'd need to have exceptionally strong oversight. It's also the case that with indirect grants, you have national rolling out the infrastructure project. And once that is done, your provinces are meant to provide funding from their resource envelope to ensure maintenance of that infrastructure. So it can be a bit niggly with respect to accountability. Other challenges with respect to the school's infrastructure backlog grant include poor communication and sharing of information. So when you have many implementing agents, as I've just described, it's not surprising that communication can become strained. There are also issues with respect to procurement, which slows down the implementation process. There are instances of inadequate management capacity at project management level, and this can affect not only effective communication, but also, of course, the ability to conduct oversight. Then there are also disincentives related to implementing agents not being the owner of a project. And this is perhaps an important point, because when you are not the owner of a project that is subject to audit opinions, then your motivation for sticking to time and cost projections may not be as strong. So in a nutshell, the service delivery model associated with the RCD program and the indirect, the indirect schools infrastructure backlog grant, it entails a rather complex supply chain management process. And this, unfortunately, can increase the risk for delays and even, in some cases, irregularities. Now, the second, we move on to the second key infrastructure grant, and that is your education infrastructure grant, or your EIG. The EIG has multiple education-related objectives, some of them similar to the schools infrastructure backlog grants, or the RCD program, but the objective of this grant includes accelerating the construction, maintenance, upgrading, and rehabilitation of new and existing infrastructure, enhancing capacity to deliver infrastructure in education, addressing damaged education infrastructure, and assisting in meeting targets in the norms and standards. So this conditional grant is aimed at assisting your provincial education departments in aligning with norms and standards. But as you've seen there, there's also quite a significant focus on maintenance and repairs, those operational costs associated with infrastructure. The education infrastructure grant is a Schedule 4 conditional grant, which it means it's a supplementary conditional grant. So it aims to supplement provincial allocations. So the implication here is that provinces receive this conditional grant, but then they must also make a contribution from their revenue, the provincial equitable share, or PES, to supplement that allocation. And the DG mentioned this. Unfortunately, what we've seen is that due to the constrained economic climate we find ourselves in, not only this year, but for the past few years, we've seen a number of conditional grants being cut, and the EIG, the Education Infrastructure Grant, is one of those conditional grants that has seen cuts. Now, the concern is that you have this conditional grant coming from national to provinces, and it's being cut. On the other side, you have provinces facing constraints in their budgets, and the result is that we see provinces are not really supplementing from their own revenue, and rather they tend to rely a lot on the EIG, and you know, so they're not contributing equally from their PES or their own revenue to fund infrastructure. And the last few bullet points on that slide, they just show some snapshot of trends for 2019-20, where we see the variation that exists, where on the one hand you have provinces that are contributing very little from their own resources. The Eastern Cape is unable to allocate anything. The same with Northwest and Northern Cape, who contribute under 1% from their own revenue to education infrastructure. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you see some higher figures for provinces like the Western Cape and Gauteng. So those were the trends in 2019. And we know that the fiscal framework of the country is even more constrained now, and we will see a tightening of resources available to provinces, and we need to be aware of how this will negatively impact on aspects of service delivery, and in this case how it will impact school infrastructure. But we've included a slide on that, and we'll come to that in a minute. What the next slide 16 shows is just the allocations and spending trends. So in terms of allocations, 77 billion has been channeled through the education infrastructure grant. If you look at that top graph on slide 16, it shows the real growth in allocations to the education infrastructure grant. And specifically as of 2016, there's a trend of slower growth in allocations and worryingly reductions in allocations to EIG. So what I was referring to earlier. So, you know, in the face of these reductions, and given that provinces rely heavily on funding from this conditional grant for education infrastructure, there's concern what the situation will look like going forward. If we look at the bottom figure, it shows spending performance. So this conditional grant has performed quite well with an average spending of 97%. So spending the bulk of what has been allocated. Then if we look at moving to the next slide, the slide compares spending performance to delivery performance. So the red bar considers what the delivery target for 2019 was and what was actually delivered. And the blue bar gives you how much of the allocated budget was spent in that particular, in 2019. And we do it we present that information for the 9 provinces. But on aggregate, if we look at the two last bars in that figure, 98.6 of the budget was spent in 2019, and this is alongside 62% of the targets for 2019 being met. And then you'll see again variation across the provinces. And some of the stated reasons for this level of performance include lack of capacity, procurement delays, poor planning and late payments to contractors, as was mentioned earlier, vandalism, and also just insufficient budgets to meet backlogs. So before we move on to the non-infrastructure conditional grant, we've just included two slides here where we wanted to highlight just some key issues with respect to the existing mode of infrastructure delivery. And the first is that the current way in which we roll out infrastructure projects, and I guess it's not only for education, but across the sectors is that we tend to separate the planning and budgeting phases from the implementation phase. So you have the department doing planning and budgeting, and then the implementing agent being separate to that process and responsible for rollout on the ground. So as alluded to earlier, when there is so much distance between those that are accountable and those implementing or rolling out the project, it often can lead to these projects not being well managed, and implementing agents are not then incentivized to properly manage these projects. And the result is that oftentimes we have projects that are over budget and not in line with timelines. Moving to the next slide, the Commission wishes to also emphasize the need for strong oversight when it comes to infrastructure projects. And this is because the oversight is not strong. You have opportunities for fiscal misappropriation to arise. Other challenges that are associated with lack of strong oversight include consultants being incentivized to over-design projects because their payments are often based on a percentage of the project cost. We also noted there's no third-party review of tenders awarded by implementing agents, even though they are solely responsible for appointing the contractors. So awarding projects to contractors without proper grading and proven track record can also result in inefficiencies in provincial infrastructure provision. And also permanent on-site supervision of contractors, if that is absent, it allows for concealment of defects and the use of poor quality material. So there needs to be strong on the ground oversight. We'd also like to emphasize the point about the disconnect between, on the one hand, using these implementing agents, whilst on the other hand, and in line with the Infrastructure Delivery Management System, or IDMS, departments are now also starting to build in-house capacity, built environment capacity. So if we are spending money and employing people, we'd also need to expect that over time, we see an improvement in the management of these infrastructure projects, and also perhaps a less of a reliance on certain types of consultants. Chair, we now move to just, I think it's two slides on with respect to the non-infrastructure conditional grants, which the letter requested. And here, if we look at slide 21, we looked at four conditional grants, namely the National Schools Nutrition Program, the Math, Science and Technology Conditional Grant, the HIV AIDS Life Skills Education Conditional Grant, and the Conditional Grant for Learners with Profound Intellectual Disabilities. On aggregate, if we look at just at 2019, on aggregate, $8.1 billion is allocated in respect of non-infrastructure conditional grants. And the bulk of this goes to the National School Nutrition Program. About $7.2 billion as of 2019 is allocated to the National School Nutrition Program. And the smallest conditional grant is the one allocated in respect of learners with profound intellectual disabilities, which was allocated $235 million in 2019-20. If we look at the next slide, it just shows the spending performance of these non-infrastructure conditional grants over the period 2015-16 to 2019-20. And we see that generally spending of these non-infrastructure conditional grants seem to be aligned to budgets. The only conditional grant one can point out here is the Math, Science and Technology Conditional Grant, which records just under 80% spending as of 2019-20. And I think it is, given the importance of this conditional grant, we need to check what are the drivers of the underspending in this grant. you know, given its important role in funding the provision of support and resources to improve math, science and technology teaching and learning across schools. And I think the importance of this conditional grant is further underlined by the fact of what we saw in the earlier slides, which shows that around 80% of schools do not have access to laboratory facilities. We'd also like to note the improved spending performance of the conditional grant directed at learners with profound intellectual disabilities. This conditional grant experienced some teething problems since its establishment, but we see there's been, if you look at the last three bars in that figure, you'll see there's been a consistent improvement in spending since 2017. Chair, then we were also asked to provide some inputs on equity in education. And if we look at slide 24, just as we have the norms and standards for school infrastructure with respect to funding, the South African National Norms and Standards for School Funding is the central cog in the department's plan to bring about a more equitable approach to the school funding framework. Members would know that the norms and the school funding norms and standards take a quintile-based approach to funding, whereby quintile one includes the neediest schools and quintile five relates to the most affluent schools. Now, according to the school funding norms and standards, learners in quintiles one, two, and three, learners in those schools do not pay school fees. And each year, the Department of Basic Education sets the target per learner amount for each quintile. Provincial education departments then have to fund learners in accordance with these nationally determined amounts. And if we look at the next slide, the table on that slide just sets out the nationally set targets or threshold amounts for each of the quintiles in both 2019 and 2020. And if you look at the last row at the bottom of that table in bold, it indicates the target or threshold amount. So you'll see for 2020, which is the last three columns, provinces are required to allocate 1,466 in respect of each learner falling within schools in quintiles 1, 2, and 3. For quintile 4, the national threshold amount is 735, and for quintile 5, it's set at 254 rand per learner. So that slide further shows what the nine provinces have been funding relative to those targets. Performance varies. Some provinces fund in line with the threshold amount. So if we look at the Eastern Cape, Free State, Limpopo, and Northwest, some fund specific quintiles higher than the threshold amount. So for example, Gauteng and Western Cape fund the quintile 5 learners a bit higher than the threshold amount. And then as the DG indicated, you have provinces that consistently fund below the threshold amount. And here we have KZN and Mpumalanga that fund all quintiles below the national threshold amounts. And there's also the Northern Cape that has funded quintiles 1 to 3, the poorest quintiles, below the threshold amounts. So based on those figures and trends, it would appear that some of our poorest learners are not being funded in line with minimum requirements. And this is, we think it's an important issue, and it's something that we have been raising when we present to the committee. We raised it last year as well. Chair, then as Commissioner Rockman indicated at the beginning, in an introduction, as part of the section on equity, we've included recent work that we've done on inclusive education that was recently tabled with Parliament as part of our submission for the 2021-22 Division of Revenue. And as members would know, inclusive education is about ensuring that learners, especially those with special educational needs, are integrated across the different types of schools and not confined to only attending special needs schools. So we'd like to highlight three areas that we emphasized in our analysis. And the first is the lack of accurate and up-to-date data on the number of learners with special educational needs and exactly what those needs are. There are estimates that there are about 600,000 children with disabilities that are not in school, but even those estimates are based on 2015 data. So we need an up-to-date and reliable set of data. You members would appreciate the fact that you need reliable, up-to-date data to inform decision-making. So the second challenge with respect to inclusive education is the incomplete policy process. So members would know that the education white paper sets out government aspirations with respect to inclusive education. That was published in 2001. It's 19 years later, and there is still no legislation to give effect to the policy aspirations contained in White Paper 6. Legislation allocates a legal mandate. That's how government works. So we need the policy process to be concluded and for that legislation to be updated and finalized. And, you know, there are a number of knock-on issues that arise because of lack of legislation. One is the development of an appropriate funding framework. So, for example, learners with special educational needs that are based in public ordinary schools are funded in line with the school funding norms and standards, because the school funding norms and standards are directed at your ordinary public ordinary schools. And there are no equivalent norms and standards for learners with special educational needs that are based in special needs schools. So we need firm legislation so that we can devise a uniform funding framework for learners with special educational needs, irrespective of the type of school that they attend. The third challenge, or final challenge there, relates to the need to adequately train teachers to assist in determining the special educational needs of learners. Members would know that the more learners with disabilities, the more teachers a school should get. But to classify learners as having special needs requires your schools or your teachers to assess learners in terms of the policy on screening, identification, assessment, and support, also known as the CIAS policy. And the problem is that many teachers are not well trained in how to do this. And so learners are not properly assessed. And the impact of that is that we have the provisioning of posts that do not properly reflect the needs of learners. So based on those our analysis, we made a number of recommendations with respect to inclusive education. It's there for members to go through, but I'll just quickly summarize in given time constraints. So basically, we're recommending that with respect to inclusive education, we need the relevant legislation to be finalized, and that the finalized of legislation be accompanied by a time-bound and costed implementation plan. Sorry, then with respect to better understanding the extent of need in the sector, we recommend that as a matter of urgency, basic education together with relevant stakeholders conduct an assessment of need, and that a funding framework be developed to ensure a uniform approach to funding learners with special educational needs, irrespective of the school they attend. Then, Chair, the last few slides speaks to the events of this year, the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and the implications for the basic education sector, particularly from a budgetary point of view. I will not dwell on slide 929. It just spells out some of the broad effects of the pandemic and the associated lockdown and the effects it had on schooling in terms of closure, etc. But if we can move to slide 30. Now this slide was what emerged on the 24th of June 2020 when the Minister of Finance tabled the supplementary adjustment budget. And the table shows what was budgeted or allocated as at February 2020, which is the second column there. Then the column titled revision indicates how allocations, particularly your conditional grants, were affected as government needed to prioritize its spending so as to make provision for the fight against the COVID-19 and also to ensure resources to provide relief to households, businesses, etc. So we see significant cuts to the education infrastructure grant that provinces already are relying heavily on. So the EIG was allocated 11 billion in February with the February 2020 budget. It was then adjusted downwards by 2 billion in the special adjustments budget. So on the back of the slower growth and reductions to this conditional grant over the years, there are now further reductions. We see an addition of 540 million to the school infrastructure backlog grant. The HIV AIDS and maths and science conditional grants are cut by 60 and 68 million respectively. On the positive side, there were no cuts to the National School Nutrition Program grant, as well as the conditional grant for learners with profound intellectual disabilities. But basically, these reductions will mean delays in starting new infrastructure projects, with focus shifted now to your essential spending. So essential maintenance and also the provision of PPEs, sanitizer, etc. But I think the most up-to-date information now is, or what is important now is the implications of the medium-term budget policy statement, or MTBPS, that was tabled last Wednesday. And members will know the MTBPS aims to provide a sense of what the policy priorities and plans of government are for the next 3 years. So we know that we are facing a really constrained economic environment with economic growth contracting, revenue projections lower than anticipated, and borrowing at record levels. And as a result of all of this, we are seeing attempts at reining in spending, and either slower growth or reductions in allocations are being broadly applied across all three spheres of government over the next 3 years. And what we did was just to show in that table the projections for the learning and culture functional group over the next 3 years. As you know, the learning and culture functional group comprises basic education, post-school education and training, PSET, and then your arts, culture, sport, and recreation. And what we'd like to highlight is that portion in gray, which shows the adjustments to next year's budget, the 2021-22 budget. And you can see that overall, the functional category of learning and culture will grow marginally by 0.2%. Perhaps I must also indicate that that is nominal growth, so we haven't even factored in inflation yet. When you factor in inflation, it will probably be reductions. Then when you look at the component parts, you see that basic education is set to see no adjustment. Post-school education and training will see about a 1% increase, and arts, culture, sport, and recreation will see a reduction in its allocations as well. So these are the plans, and on the other side, we know that the drivers of demand and the costs are not standing still. So next year, there will be more learners coming into the system. We know that there will be inflation and cost increases. And our concern is how will these departments manage the changes or lack of changes in their allocations. Either departments will have to increase their levels of efficiency so as to be able to maintain service delivery levels. But in all likelihood, something has got to give. And we would advise that the committee needs to understand how the department will absorb these changes, and specifically and importantly, how service delivery of basic education services will be affected. These are just the last two concluding slides. So we'd like to highlight that in conclusion, if uneven quality and access to school infrastructure and other educational inputs are not addressed, the existing disparities in educational outcomes will persist. And certainly the events of this year, the COVID-19 pandemic, has served to emphasize existing inequalities in access and quality of such access. And with respect to conditional grants, I think the key point is that we think that the service delivery model underpinning the ACD program should be reviewed. We note the progress that has been made, but there are still significant gaps in delivery and targets met. And because ACD is funded through that conditional grant, the School Infrastructure Backlogs grant, this has a direct bearing on the broader division of revenue. So we would advise that outstanding targets be quantified and, you know, the approach be further considered by the education sector together with national and provincial treasuries. And we think that this is even more important given the existing constraints and the constraints that we are set to see in public finances, especially in 2021-22, so especially next year and in the medium term. Then with respect to equity, we suggest that the committee be that basic education appraise the committee as to why cases of per learner funding below the national threshold amounts have been allowed to persist. That the underfunding in the three provinces be quantified, and we need to understand how these provincial budgets must be adjusted to bring the per learner funding in line with the national threshold amounts, and also whether any plans or timeframes have been put in place to address this concerning issue. Then finally, in promoting equity and inclusive education, we believe that the needs of learners with special educational needs should receive particular priority. Chair, that brings us to the end of the slide presentation. If I may, with your permission, just hand back to Commissioner Rockman in case she has some final comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.
Commissioner Rockman, yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Now, I think this is the presentation. It is a lot of information. And noting progress in some areas, but challenges, and the road forward is going to be very challenging for the education sector. I think let me hand over back to you, and then we will take any clarifications or questions and engage when necessary. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Commissioner Rockman, and your team. Honourable members, the presentations I made, ours is to engage, and so that, you know, we chart a way forward on what's to be done after this. We're going to have lots of meetings going forward. The next one, I think, is next week with the department, and this information will go a long way in helping us to engage and, you know, verify issues, scratch the surface, and ultimately come up with solutions that will help to build this country going forward. I am worried, DG, about the underspending in math and science, where only 78% was spent, when the need is so high for math, science, and technology. And the other things we'd like to know is that how much are we investing in developing math and science, you know, our teachers, including even learning materials and all that. we need to build this capacity at home in our country, like you know, in many areas in South Africa, all around Limpopo areas, and possibly even Mpumalanga. There are lots of maths teachers come from Zimbabwe. And the day Zimbabweans decide, the day Zimbabweans will think their things get well and they go back home, we going to have a very serious problem in building capacity to develop, to build the economy. The other issues, again, that worries me, as that is the underfunding in poor quintiles schools, that we are we not doing what is supposed to be done, and I want to know why. Maybe when we engage with this with the department, and when we engage with the provincial departments as part of our oversight role, those are the information that needs to be used. We'll be using this information from the FFC to help us further interrogate and help solve problems. Honorable members, that's the input. It's time to engage. Members can ask questions. So we will participate by using the raise your hand. We'll use the raise your hand, icon to answer questions. But before that, let's take the second presentation. Let's take the second presentation, and then, it's an hour is gone now into our meeting. Hola. Yes, honorable members, let's, the second presentation will, who is going to give us the presentation? To my gadgets are not okay. Noel Thando, what's the next presentation?
Chair, I see the Auditor General represented by Mr. Joshua Bekazi. It looks like, if I'm not mistaken, Joshua will make the presentation as part of the Auditor General.
Okay, thank you.
Chairperson. Yes. Are we taking questions or what? I'm a little bit confused.
No, we're not taking questions. I said we'll take the second presentation and then we'll engage.
Okay.
I made a mistake by saying that let us engage, because, you know, it's so, the presentation is so good. We just want to go into it at once. Let's give the AG's office to give us a presentation, and then we'll engage.
Thank you so much, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning. Not a problem, DG. Thank you so much, Chair. I think it's just a way of introduction again. My name is Khaboko Mapi. I'm the business executive overseeing the basic education. I am accompanied by Mr. Joshua Baganzi, who's a senior manager directly working with the basic education. We brought to the committee a presentation. The presentation contains two main sections. The first section will deal with the audit outcome of the National Basic Education as a department. It will reflect on the matters that we observed right from the financial statements into the performance report and the compliance with the laws and regulations. The second part of the presentation will deal with the contents of the AG special report on the COVID, the report that we tabled on the 2nd of September in response to the president's request that we support government as and when the spending is happening on the PPE. So that second report will reflect on some of the observations that we've made from the needs analysis right up until the supply chain requirements and the adherence thereto. We will also, Chair, for your benefit, to be tabling the second report on COVID particularly, and we are targeting the third week of November from the office perspective, which would as well look at the matters that would have came through as and when the provinces were spending on PPE, sanitation, and water infrastructure accordingly. So I'm going to allow Joshua just to give us a presentation on the audit outcome of DBE. We'll also get into the second part, and then we can take the comments, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kabo. I'll start off with the third slide, indicating our role as the AG in the BRRR reporting process. Our role basically is to reflect on the audit work that we perform to assist the portfolio committee in its oversight role of assessing the performance of the entities in its portfolio, taking into consideration the objective of the committee to produce a budgetary review and recommendation report. Next, I'll share the audit outcomes for the department as well as the entity. But before I share those audit outcomes, just to reflect in terms of the areas that we examine when we auditing, we basically look at three areas. We look at the financial statements, whether they've been fairly presented in all material aspects. We also look at the annual report to see whether it's reliable and credible and the information presented thereof. Then we also look at the compliance with all the laws and regulations governing the financial matters of a particular entity. And once we finish examining those three areas, we then express opinions. So the possible five opinions that we present, one being the first one with the green color coding is the unqualified with no findings, meaning they know misstatements in the financial statements, they know misstatements in the annual performance report, and there's no non-compliance identified. Then we also express a financially unqualified opinion with findings, where we say that the financial statements are not qualified, but you could have findings on the annual performance report, or you could have findings with regards to non-compliance. Then a qualified opinion is one way we express to say that there are certain misstatements in the financial statements presented, and some instances, some areas, there are areas of non-compliance as well as findings on annual performance report. Then the adverse opinion is the one where we have too many items within the financial statements which are materially misstated. And then lastly is the disclaimer opinion where we can't, it's the opinion that we express because due to absence of evidence to support the amounts that have been reported in the annual financial statements as well as in the annual performance report. The percentages in this presentation are calculated based on the completed audits, two audits in this current year. And the reason why we're using two auditees is because the South African Council for Educators we haven't finalized the audit thereof because they submitted the financial statements late. Their audit report should be finalized by the end of November. So the presentation and the analysis in the forthcoming slides is purely based on the Department of Basic Education as well as UMALUSI. And I think before I proceed to the audit outcomes, I think it's important to reflect on the accountability wheel or wagon that we usually propose to our auditees and entities to try to follow this accountability wheel to bring about better audit outcomes as well as improve on their processes and improving on the service delivery imperatives. So what we advocate for, we say that for you to be able to deliver on your service delivery and to bring about positive audit outcomes, you need to plan, do, check, as well as act. So what do we mean by planning? When we advise to the entities to plan, we basically mean that the entities or auditees should spend sufficient time and consult widely to clearly define the targets that they need to achieve with regards to their mandate. They need to use proper action plans to deal with audit deficiencies that we identified in the prior so that those things don't recur. They also need to look at, spend a bit of time in terms of the strategic planning in producing the strategic plan, as well as the annual performance plan, and making sure that appropriate budget is allocated to the different indicators and performance targets. We also advocate for entities to do proper project plans that they can be able to achieve on. And with all this said, with all these resources allocated to the different priorities, and to make sure that responsibilities are clearly defined and who is responsible for what to enable achievement of these targets. Then for you to be able to achieve and to produce these particular targets and your service delivery imperatives, you also need to put a proper and adequate system of internal controls. So with a proper system of internal controls, it will enable you to deliver on your priorities in an efficient and economic manner. It will enable you to produce reliable financial statements. It will also allow you to produce a reliable annual performance report, and in the end, allow you to comply with laws and regulations. And for the internal controls to perform or to be effective, we also need to make sure that ensure that all these controls are being monitored, and that's why we advocate for checking. So by monitoring, we mean that you need to have an effective internal audit function in place. You need to have an effective audit committee in place, as well as the management, who are the first level of assurance. They need to be performing in line with their responsibilities. And then lastly, you need to act. You need to make sure that the people that you have appointed are accountable for their actions and answerable for what they've done. And in cases where there's transgressions, then consequence management must kick in. And we believe that if every entity follows this particular accountability wheel or cycle, then there will be better audit outcomes or better results, and ultimately the service delivery will improve. Then I'll go next to the portfolio outcome. For the current year, our analysis based on the pictorial and the slide here is reflecting on the audit outcomes of a period of 5 years, but the concentration mainly for the current year, 1920, there's been a slight improvement in the sense that Umalusi improved its audit outcome. It was unqualified with no findings, and the audit of SACE has not been included in this analysis because it's still ongoing. And the Department of Basic Education was qualified in the current year, similar to the prior. And the main concern was the reason why most of the department was qualified was the material adjustment. There were too many material adjustments that were affected to the annual financial statement. And in the end, some of those adjustments remained uncorrected. And those uncorrected material misstatements resulted into the financial statements receiving a qualified opinion. And the qualified opinion for the department was mainly due to internal control deficiencies regarding to monitoring and accounting for infrastructure program, RCD. And therefore, it resulted into a qualification on capital commitments due to capital commitments being disclosed in the financial statements, but they don't meet the definition of commitments. We noted that there were school projects that had reached practical completion, but were still reflected as commitments. Furthermore, there were internal controls deficiencies to prevent and detect instances of non-compliance, which for when procuring goods and services, that led to irregular expenditure. So we also qualify the department on the completeness of irregular expenditure. Chair, I think we talked about the internal control deficiencies with regards to RCD. And for the committee, the priors, we previously qualified the department on immovable assets, but for the current year, we've seen some improvement, although they were still qualified on the capital commitments, but there's still traction in that particular area that predominantly when it comes to the coordination and monitoring with the implementing agents, there's been an improvement to a certain extent where some of the qualifications that were there in the prior, they fell off. So the department has started for the current year to try to get the information and account properly for some of the information coming from the implementing agents. So therefore, I think what's left for the department to take away this particular qualification is the proper reconciliation and accounting for the capital commitments. And I think with time going forward, they should be able to alleviate this particular qualification matter if they continue with the kind of trial that they had embarked on in the prior year. Just unfortunate that by the time we concluded, they could not be able to sufficiently account for the capital commitments. And when it comes to irregular expenditure as well, it's still a concern that not all irregular expenditure is so the issue here is the prevention of irregular expenditure. But in terms of investigation with the consequence management for all the irregular expenditure that we identified, the department was on board. They tried to investigate all the irregular expenditure that we identified in the prior and consequences where necessary, they were undertaken. The next slide, Chair, I'm reflecting on the financial reporting for the portfolio. Like I indicated, we're only analyzing two entities. So the first analysis where we look at the financial statements submitted without errors. So we say 50% for the current year because if you look at the two entities, Omalusi is the one that submitted financial statements without errors. And then quality of financial submission after auditing, it still remains 50% because of the unqualified opinion without finding for Omalusi and therefore 50%. And like I indicated on the previous slide, the qualification areas for the department were on capital commitment disclosure and irregular expenditure. Then we also reflect on the credibility of performance reporting. We look at the performance report, what was submitted at the time when they submitted, whether there were errors or not. And then we also reflect on the quality of financial submission after auditing. If you look at 1920, the performance report submitted without errors was 50%. Omalusi's report, we didn't find errors when they submitted. For the department, there was errors, but management subsequently corrected those misstatements. Therefore, we didn't have material findings on performance reporting when it came to the department. Therefore, a reflection of 100% improvement for the portfolio as a whole. So this is one area where the department has improved significantly relative to the prior. And then the other area that we look at is the disregard for compliance with laws and regulations. And if you look at the graphics on the left or the graphs on the left, the pink color is saying the findings, we had compliance with key findings. And then the green one indicates that there were no compliance findings. But if we to compare the 2 years in terms of the non-compliance or the top non-compliance areas, they were similar, except for the current year, we don't have inadequate consequence management. So that's indicative or reflective of the consequence management that the department has undertaken in the prior year. However, the top non-compliance areas of quality of financial statements still exist. The non-compliance with regards to prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure is still there. And we still have non-compliance with regards to management of procurement and contracts as well. And the status of internal controls that led to the audit outcomes. And we believe that in some areas, the internal controls are working effectively, but we still need, specifically for the department, the internal controls in the areas of financial and performance management related to proper record keeping, daily and monthly controls, reconciliation controls, as well as the review and monitoring of compliance. These are the, we believe that these areas that need to be strengthened so that the department can bring about a positive audit outcome. On the next slide, we reflect on the irregular expenditure incurred for the over the past 2 years. And irregular expenditure by definition is expenditure incurred in vain and could have been avoided if reasonable steps had been taken and there was no value for money. And if you to analyze the irregular expenditure over the 2 years, it increased significantly from 1819 to 1920. And for the portfolio, DBE and Umalusi, it amounts to 83 million. And the makeup thereof is DBE has irregular expenditure of 76 million, and Umalusi has got irregular expenditure of 6.9 million. The main contributors for the DBE irregular expenditure is the contract invoices not having been paid timely, therefore resulting interest being charged of 7.4 million. And then mainly, there were all projects that were cancelled or stopped, therefore resulting in two fruitless and wasteful of 60 million. And there were also fruitless and wasteful expenditure of due to remedial work of 2.7 million, coupled with fraudulent payments of 5.3 million at an implementing agent. This implementing agent is the DPW in the Eastern Cape. And then Umalusi matters received unqualified audits with no findings. They also had irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 6.9 million relating to payment that was made to a joint venture contract that has been cancelled. So essentially, this particular contract for Umalusi was a prepayment where Umalusi wanted to refurbish its own offices. But then the contracting, due to the dispute between the contractor who is a joint venture, then it was cancelled. So Umalusi is in the process of trying to recover this amount that was prepaid to these particular contractors. Then the graphics below is just an analyzing to say of the previous year fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was reported for investigation, how much of it has been investigated. And if you analyze, most of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the department has been investigated. And what we looked at for the quantum, it was 20 cases, 19 of them had already been investigated. And one of them, which is reflective of the 5%, which was still under investigation relating to a SAS payment. Then on the next slide, Chair, we also reflect on the irregular expenditure incurred over the period of 2 years, 1920 and 1819. And when we look at this, we also see or we note that the irregular expenditure has significantly increased as well compared to the prior. And in the prior, it was 210 million. Now it's grown to 818 million. And most of this irregular expenditure, or 100% of it, relates to the current year and previous year that was discovered in the current year, resulting in contravention of supply chain regulations. And regular expenditure is also one of the areas that, like I indicated in the previous slides, where we qualify the department on. But however, most of these irregular expenditures that were reported in the prior, the department has been able to investigate them, and therefore we didn't have an issue in terms of consequence management and following up on the issues that were picked up with regards to irregular expenditure. Then the next slide, or the current slide, is just indicating the most common supply chain findings. And I think for us, we one of our recommendations is all supply chain findings that were picked up should be investigated. But mostly, for DBE, the most common supply chain findings related to contract or specification not meeting the requirements of designated for local content and production was not followed in most of those specifications. We also picked up instances where there were repeat conflicts of interest due to the weak internal controls within the department. Then the next slide is meant to depict whether entities are able to investigate all fraud or allegations that come about due to supply chain misconduct. And like I indicated on the previous slide, all the instances that were picked up for supply chain or instances that resulted in regular expenditure for the departments were investigated. So the areas that we look at or analyze to say whether an entity allegations that were not investigated or investigation took longer than 3 months or allegations not properly investigated. So we didn't pick up anything, any of those particular indicators when we reviewed the department. So all of the department cases were investigated and therefore a reflection of 0% on all these indicators here. So the department was able to act on all the reported supply chain misconduct for the previous years. However, it's also important to indicate that the few investigations that have been outstanding, but that's an external investigation by the Hawks. So that it was still out ongoing at year end and related to misconduct or fraud at some of the implementing agents in the prior years. Investigations as well for potential and irregular expenditures had already commenced and still under investigation, although this particular one is reflected as part of the note, financial note. Chair, the other item that I wanted to reflect on is the principle related to material irregularities. And Chair and the committee, you might recall that in the prior, the Public Audit Act was amended and it brought in a new definition called material irregularities. And in the prior, we were able to adopt it for the Department of Basic Education and we reported a material irregularity in the 2018-19 audit report. And for the current year, we followed up to find out whether the department was able to recover the money that was paid to the supplier of 2.7 million regards to remedial work. So when we followed up with the department, we reviewed the correspondences and we noted that there were various correspondences where the department tried to issue a letter of demand to try to recover for the remedial work. The supplier in this particular material irregularity that was reported in the prior acknowledged. However, they could not acknowledge the liability for the financial loss of the 2.7. And because of them not agreeing to that, then the matter required dispute resolution. And in terms of the contractual arrangement between the service provider and the department, therefore a facilitator was appointed on the 28th July to mediate between the parties by the clause included, by the dispute resolution clause included in the MOA. So the department and the service provider have since had meetings tried to resolve this particular matter on the 13th and the 17th of September, as well as a joint meeting on the 18th of September. So from our perspective as the Auditor General, we were not able to conclude, but we will follow up on the implementation of the planned action during our next audit. We didn't pick up any material irregularity for the current year as well. Chair, I think in a nutshell, this is a portfolio snapshot for the 1920 audit outcome. And must recall as well, we're just looking at two auditees, the department and Umalusi. So when we look at the unqualified with no findings, it's a 50% because Umalusi was not qualified. And then financially unqualified, financial statements still 50% because of Umalusi as well. And no findings on performance report, it's 100%. Both the department and Umalusi didn't have findings on the performance report. And in terms of no findings on compliance with legislation, there's only one entity that had no findings, so a 50%. And then lastly is the reflection of a irregular expenditure. Like I indicated in the previous slide, that there's been a regression as the quantum of irregular expenditure has significantly increased in the current year. And as I think after having looked at the findings and everything, we analyzed and came up to one key root cause where we're saying that action plans need to be due to most of these findings were as a result of action plans not being implemented timely or the department not having adequately addressed all the root causes that were raised in the previous years. And therefore, as part of our recommendations on the next slide, we're recommending that the department should ensure timely implementation of the action plan drawn up to address internal control deficiencies identified by our reports. The action plan should focus on the underlying root cause. This will prevent recurrence of audit findings going forward in the future. Then we're also recommending that the accounting officers should ensure that non-compliance findings are investigated to determine whether there is misconduct in the supply chain processes. Disciplinary hearings should be held where misconduct was confirmed. All irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful should be investigated timely to determine whether such expenditure should be recovered from the responsible official. And we also are recommending to continue with a strong performance management of all the officials and implementing sound performance management processes and evaluating the monitoring performance and consistently demonstrating poor performance to have consequence thereof. And I think we're also saying controls should be in place to ensure that transactions are properly processed in an accurate, complete, and timely manner, which in turn will reduce the errors and omissions in the financial and performance reports. So such controls could include daily capturing of financial transactions, supervisory reviews of captured information, and independent monthly reconciliation of key accounts, the collection of performance information at intervals where appropriate for monitoring service delivery targets and milestones, as well as the validation of recorded information. There should also be confirming that all the legislative requirements and policies have been complied with before initiating transactions. And overall is oversight to strengthen oversight over financial reporting and compliance with laws and regulations. So those are the recommendations that we're proposing for the department. And for the portfolio committee as well, just to facilitate and to enable the work, we're saying that the portfolio committee should ensure that quarterly reports submitted should have been verified by internal audit and audit committee, as well as the portfolio committee should do evaluation of the quarterly reports, action plans, and measures for consequences, and the details of how the departments and entities will resolve issues raised, and that those issues will not recur, should be monitored when the departments present the quarterly reports. And then for instances where there is material irregularities, we think the portfolio committee use the information, the audit report on material irregularities for accountability and oversight purposes, insisting on timely implementation of recommendation and use the reports tabled on progress with material irregularities to oversee and influence progress made with the implementation of these actions. Chair, now I'm going on the next, on the, this slide, we're just reflecting on the audit outcomes for the sector as a whole, indicating all the 9 provinces as well as the department. And Chair, on this particular slide, the 3 entities or departments that still have outstanding audits, the audits have not yet been finalized, and that's Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga. And we hope it will be, the sign-off will be happening in the next couple of days. And other than that, most of the audit outcomes are similar if you to compare between 1920 and 1819, except for Northern Cape, they improved last year, they were qualified, and the current year, they were not qualified, they were unqualified with findings. And the qualified entities, for example, the department, Eastern Cape was qualified on the infrastructure assets as well, and similarly Limpopo was qualified on capital commitments as well as irregular expenditure. And then the rest of the entities were unqualified with findings. Yeah, those are the audit outcomes for 1920. And I'm going to proceed to reflect on our special audit that we performed, special audit report one by Carbon Kated. Just the key observations that came out of that special audit report one. And we're currently busy finalizing the special audit report two, and we'll come back and present to the committee in due course once the report has been tabled. So for the sector as well, we focused on two initiatives. The first initiative that we looked at was the provisioning of personal protective equipment, PPE, to learners, educators, and support staff, so that the schools were able to open up. And with the provisioning of PPE, we looked at three areas where we looked at need analysis of PPE, bulk warehousing, distribution of PPE, PPE stock management at schools, and the rationale and safe use and disposal of PPE. We also looked at the procurement and contract management of PPE and internal control weaknesses as well there. Then the second initiative that we focused on was the emergency water and basic sanitation services to the selected public schools, where we also looked at the procurement and contract management. We also reflected on the internal control weaknesses in terms of the payment processes at all these, for all the initiatives that we looked at. And on the next slide are some of the key audit findings or observations that we picked up. And the first one was on demand and need analysis, where we noted that it was not properly done. So we noted from the responses that the provincial education department used different processes to determine the needs, the PPE needs at school. Some provincial departments did not use available systems such as FSSM to determine how much PPE was needed for schools based on the actual number of registered employees and learners. Therefore, in some instances, when we did the site visit, we noted that they were, due to the inadequate needs analysis or demand analysis done, there were shortages in some schools. We also noted that there were inconsistent supply of PPE to schools by provinces, resulting in insufficient PPE being distributed to schools. PPE was not distributed consistently to provinces, education districts, and schools. For example, in the Northwest, Free State, and Mpumalanga education departments, they did not procure PPE for non-teaching personnel, such as school administration staff, cleaners, security, general staff, and food handlers. So therefore, the schools had to use their own budgets to buy PPE for the additional staff and the volunteers. Then the next key observation that we picked up was with regards to the substandard quality of PPE supplied to schools by the suppliers, where we noted that some of the masks were not fitting. For example, at Lionel schools, when we did a site visit, we also picked up substandard quality of PPE provided to Ramoshi school by the education districts. Then also at Kwamashlangu, we picked up quality PPE with regards to the masks that were provided for that particular school. other than the quality of PPE and the observations that we picked up on our site visits, we also picked up supply chain management findings or procurement findings. And with regards to the general supply chain management and compliance, these are the things, among others, that we picked up to say where, say, for example, Mpumalanga participated in a contract of an organ of state to procure PPE supply as well as allowed by the Treasury regulations. However, the specification of or the goods that were procured under this contract were not similar to what was already outlined in that particular contract. So therefore, that's resulting in non-compliance and possible irregular expenditure depending on how the investigation will come about it, of 21 million. In the Northwest Education Department, we identified some instances where some teachers had conflict of interest for PPE supplied, and as a result, this also will result into irregular expenditure. Then in the following instances in KZN or KwaZulu-Natal, we found that the quotation processes were not always followed. And for example, on the first bullet point, we found that only two quotations were obtained instead of three, and there was no record of deviations. So the amount of that particular procurement of 160,000 with regards to the latex hand gloves could result into a possible irregular expenditure. We also noted that for three service providers, two of the service providers were not registered on the central supplier database for the procurement of hand sanitizer to the value of 45,000 as required by the Treasury regulations. And we also noted that the contracts totaling 520 that were awarded to two service providers who are not tax compliant. We also noted that quotations totaling 490,000 were received from two suppliers who were related, who had similar addresses and were owned by the same person. So therefore, we identify a case of possible cover quoting in this particular instance. And then lastly, on the supply chain, we also identify that 20 BE points were allocated to one service provider who was awarded two contracts totaling to 550,000. However, there was no BEE certificate to confirm the level in the information submitted for audit, and therefore that amount was deemed to be irregular. Chairperson, there was also key observational findings related to the non-compliance with the disaster management instruction note. And out of those key observations, we categorized them through pricing of PPE, where we noted that from Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal, the items of PPE that were procured at a higher rate than what was stipulated in the instruction note for instruction note 5 of National Treasury, therefore resulting in overpayments. From Mpumalanga, the overpayment was 59,000, and for the possible overpayment for the KwaZulu-Natal was 316,000. Under pricing as well, we also noted that for the department, DBE, the items that were procured, all the items for PPE were all procured through the existing private, public-private partnership contract. But we noted that those PPE items that were procured at the department were procured at a much higher price than those prices that were highlighted or stipulated in the National Treasury Instruction Note, therefore resulting to an amount of overpricing of 219,000. And in the Northwest and Mpumalanga, we also picked up of issues of local production and content, as well as small business development specification when awards were being invited were not always followed. So the invitations did not always include the minimum thresholds for local production content as part of the evaluation criteria. And lastly, as part of our special audit report one, we picked up instances of internal control weaknesses with regards to the ordering, delivery, invoicing, and payment processes. And these instances were particularly picked up in the Eastern Cape, as well as in the KwaZulu-Natal. And this presented the risk that the issues, the quantities by the invoice were always not always matching to the quantities by the delivery note, therefore presented a risk of overpayment to the service provider. And for KwaZulu-Natal specifically, the amount amounted to 61,000, and although they managed to follow up with the service provider and they agreed to provide the shortfall at no additional cost. Lastly, I think there was, we also had an issue in terms of non-compliance with the implementation protocol when it came to the emergency water supply. The emergency water supply was done by the department through an implementing agent, but in terms of the implementation of the protocol agreement, it necessitated the implementing agent to provide DBE with a formal weekly progress report together with an analysis of expenses and spending thereof. But when we started off the audit, we noted that this was not being done consistently, and we brought it to the attention of the accounting officer, who committed and followed up with Randwater. And by the time we completed the report, those reports were being submitted by the implementing agent to DBE. And overall conclusion in terms of the special audit report, the plant initiatives were still progressing despite all the challenges that the sector and the country were facing due to the pandemic. We continue to engage with accounting officers on all the findings that we noted there and assessed the impact of these findings on the sector outcomes. We also shared these procurement findings with the Fusion Center for immediate follow-up and investigation. And then the agreed upon responses were to be implemented and monitored to prevent identified shortcomings reoccurring. So although in some instances, when as part of our SR2, we picked up some of the issues coming forth, but I think it's one of the things that we've tried to follow up and to make sure that all the commitments that were made by the different accounting officers were being implemented. Thanks very much, Chair, and I'll allow Cabo to close up our presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Chair. I think in summary, we're saying that from the basic education department, we are still urging them to work on the internal control system that allows them a much more reliable financial reporting. And I think that's our recommendation key to them. But reflecting on the PPE and the special work that we've done, we're basically saying we are seeing some of the control deficiencies that we've been highlighting over the years for the sector. They are now exposed and exaggerated, obviously, by the emergency that we are sitting with as a country. What we are asking the committee to look at is in instances where we've already highlighted the deficiencies, as and when on a continuous basis.
Chairperson, there is a break. We cannot hear.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Can admin help us with the?
Thank you, Chairperson. We have unmuted her. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I just want to check, Chair, if I'm audible.
We lost a little bit on what you were saying about the
Thank you so much. I think I was reflecting on the summary of our presentation. And yes. From the DBE perspective, Chair, we are saying that we are asking and urging them to work on the internal control process that will facilitate a reliable financial reporting. And that's the key thing that we've left with the management of DBE. But when we reflect on the sector, in particular the COVID work that we performed, you would imagine that we've done the work earlier than ordinarily we would have. The key thing that we've seen is that the internal control deficiencies that we've been highlighting as part of our sector report over the years, they've just been exposed and exaggerated simply because there was just a lot of magnitude of items that needed to be procured. And I think once more, as the office, we're urging the sector to strengthen the internal control environment so that we do not have to be at the mercy of service providers, because for as long as there are deficiencies, other people are bound to take advantage of us. The second report that as the AG we're hoping to table by the end of November, as I indicated, would be reflecting a lot on the water and sanitation, that the intervention that the sector had introduced to also respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're hoping to come back to the committee, reflect on the larger part of PPE, reflect on sanitation and water with some of the things that we would have seen. Right now, we are still in the process of engaging the relevant accounting officers and a sector in totality, just so that we are able to close up on the reporting. Just want to pause there, Chair, and maybe take the comments. Thank you so much.
Chairperson, the AG is done.
Comrade Chair, what happened to you? Chair?
He has disappeared.
What's going on?
As always,
the meeting is on autopilot.
It says Kukuni Network.
Kuba DG.
I can't, Honorable Member. I'm not qualified. One of the Honorable Members will have to do that.
Where is that as well?
No. The secretary, the procedures are very clear. When the chair collapses, the secretary must take over.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
What happened to Llewellyn? Where are you, Llewellyn?
Hi, members. I do see, I think Honorable Ntabeleng may have lost the connection. I may be wrong, but I don't see him. I'm probably going to have to to ask that either whip from the select committee or portfolio committee maybe just takes charge during the question and answer session until Honorable Ntabeleng returns.
Sorry, Llewellyn, yes. I think the chairperson is back.
I'm reconnected again. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, chairperson.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thank the presentation by the AG's office. Thank you very much. This information actually helps us. It empowers us also going forward to, so that when we engage with the department, we'll be having information as we are briefed together with them on where are the challenges, what are the problems. But there are other things that cannot be, that are definitely unacceptable. It doesn't matter what the situation is. You know, failure to comply with laws and regulations, it's inexcusable, Chairperson, because when people get employed, it's because they understand what the procedures are. They know the laws because they're educated people. We don't pick people from the street and start training them. So this is my real, real, real serious worry. But we're going to have a, we still going to have chance again to engage with the department as we go. I'll give this opportunity for members to engage, ask questions, comments, and yeah. time allocated to us, it's obviously less than an hour because the info, this was the information sharing and all. But thank you, honorable members. You can raise your hands using the this icon. Kibona Murata Etlamo, and then there's Desiree, there's Honorable Ngobo, in that order.
Mashabela also.
Honorable Mashabela after Ngobo.
Chairperson, am I on the platform?
Oh, and then there's Nomsa Tarabella Machezi. She'll come after Mashabela. yeah, and then can I have admin helping me with noting the names so that they can give them to me? Yeah, Honorable Murasesa.
Mududa Studo, thank you very much for this opportunity. I've been absent for quite a while. Thank you for welcoming me back. I shouldn't be the first one to speak, however, but this is a new topic. I believe no one will be allergic to this. Chair, it's true that some of us, like myself, I missed quite a number of meetings of this portfolio committee. But now my main interest here, as I will raise the question at the end, it's on the AG's report, the very last report that came forth. You have already expressed your disappointment and unacceptable mood that there are some of a number of things which cannot be condoned, to be honest, because in the end, the public will judge us based on our performance. And if we keep quiet as the portfolio committee, it simply would mean that we are in agreement with the some of the malpractices as reported by the AG. You see, there were times when I might have had some network challenges and until I sorted it out. But many a times, especially throughout the conclusion, the reporter kept on talking about Mpumalanga and the KZN, of course, to a larger extent also Northwest. But I my question is with regard to the Free State. We got the report that Free State procured during this their PPEs during this lockdown period, they procured centrally, and I thought the report from the AG would also appraise us that with the central procurement, were it found working for the province, or did it have some loopholes which needed to be corrected? So that you see, there shall come a time, we are never sure that this COVID-19 will come and go now. And maybe we'll get another money where provinces again will be expected to make procurements. We should not repeat the same mistakes. So for us not to repeat the same mistakes is, number one, as it is now, almost all those weaknesses should be identifiable, and the pro and cons also be exposed to us, so that at the end of the day, we are saying this one worked better than this one, so that we do not find ourselves in the position where we repeat our past mistakes. This is the first input that I would love to post. Now, the second and last one is, the AG's report says, apparently the remedial steps are still in the hands of provinces. When are we likely to get the report? And the report which will further include what is it that has been recommended or it has been taken as a way of addressing those who might have carelessly violated the procedures. Thank you very much, Modula Spook.
You're welcome, Principal.
Thank you, Baba.
Honorable Desiree, I think it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentations. Chair, I'll be very quick because I'm mainly going to concentrate on the infrastructure. And I'm glad the FFC gave this and referred to legislation and regulations. And I would actually would like to know, you know, I mean, if you look at the recommendations in Chapter 13 of the Constitution, etc., referred to on the mandate of the Commission on Slide 2, one would also then go beyond this presentation, how can they assist and ensure that certain of these must happen things happen and or happen within the timelines and within the budgets. I'm very often of the idea we always fight for money, but if you look at some of the allocations we receive, we can't even spend that well. And that is very, very concerning to me because we're very quick to say there's not enough money, but often money is not spent correctly. And you can just look at the irregular expenditure of 818.5 million rand this fin year. And it's also quite true, stated here that quality of school infrastructure, especially in respect of the physical conditions of school buildings, can influence attendance and dropout rates, and a good school infrastructure can also impact on teacher motivation. Now, with all that in mind, and not going through all the different grants, whatever we get, I want to raise a few things. And I've been in Parliament since 2004, not long after that OCD came. And if you read the NEEMS reports every year and other reports that come to us, we are really, really still lacking in the majority of our schools, not having laboratories or library facilities, and to a lesser extent, of course, sport facilities, although I must say that by far the majority of sports facilities are also not of a very excellent condition, what we expect to homegrow our own new sports heroes. Now, infrastructure also, if we keep on neglecting it with the COVID situation at the moment, and who knows how long it will stay, is also putting healthy lifestyles at risk. Chairperson, on slide 9, I would just like to understand something. If you look at the progress in respect of targets of infrastructure and you look at the Eastern Cape province, in the first two fin years there, which states the sport facilities and laboratory facilities, it seems like the Eastern Cape grew, and I would have thought every year it would become less. So on sport facilities, they went from 61.62% to 64.54%. And on laboratory facilities they don't have, it went up from 66.7% to 93.whatever%. Now, what would the reason be? I can just think maybe new schools were built, or maybe those were of such a condition that it can't be used, but I think we could get a clarity on that. And Chairperson, I would also want to point out, I mean, a city is now 8 financial years later. And we saw the extension for current projects in the pipeline, that will be dealt with. But if you say 8 years later and 16.8 billion rand allocated, we've just done about on average 70% of that allocation has been spent. I find it, speaking on a CD every time we have a budget, every time we have anything to do with infrastructure, and it seems like, and I can't blame every department and every province and every whoever, but there is remaining a huge lack of understanding the urgency of the money to be spent for urgent matters like proper infrastructure. The targets is really slow, and I think it across all the provinces it is very, very concerning. Chairperson, I would also like to know, I mean, we talk about the norms and standards that the minister signs off, you know, in 2013, I think it was published, and it is legally binding regulation on the minimum norms and standards for all school infrastructure. So provincial MECs must report annually to our minister on the plans on how to address this backlogs at the district level in the province, and thereafter on the implementation progress report on implementation. Please, except from going to a court, because, you know, we get more and more class action against us, or possibly very soon another one, what else can we do to make the provinces, first of all, to give facts in these reports and actually get it done? It doesn't help. We have commissions. We have the AG, who's given us reason to be very, very concerned again with the qualified in some of our provinces. What can we do that we actually get going? And in this get going, I still maintain that infrastructure is a problem as it is to have enough proper schools. We have vandalized schools, over 1,500 of it, 1,500 and something, I recall. We do no maintenance, and I mean no maintenance. What do we expect must happen to our assets? And Chairperson, there is no safety because we say we can't afford it, so therefore we will have vandalism and we will have theft. So when will we get a comparison? Is it cheaper to get insurance and other safety networks to look after our infrastructure and assets compared to not paying insurance and just get it stolen or vandalized and then don't have money to fix it? I'm very concerned about it, and it's not looking good, I must say. Thank you, Chairperson.
Are more than welcome. Who is the next?
It's Ndobo, Honorable Ndobo, Chairperson.
Yeah, after Ndobo, and then it will be Machezi and Mashabela, Honorable Mashabela, in that order. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to start off by saying I'll be very brief. And the reason why is exactly because of the presentations. The presentation, it's like one is in hell, and you do not know where to start and where to end. What do you pick up for commenting on? What do you leave out? In particular, I'm talking about the finances, because that is where it was just painted black. Well, the Director General is listening. No, DG, I want to be honest. It's the first time that one gets physically drained and affected by this situation, like it has happened today. Let me start by maybe making one comment on the norms and standards. The norms and standards, one of the honorable members has already said something about this. And actually, Chairperson, I'm not myself. I did not even create its route. It was not my intention. But it's the state one finds himself in. The norms and standards, Chairperson, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga province, everything is just red. The line is red. In actual fact, they don't even at least reach 50% of the national threshold.
Mm.
Now, the question is, where is the national department? Is the national department going to say, well, the provinces have that leeway of doing things, we can go this far, we cannot go that far as the national department. Oh, please. You know, we're talking about we have a responsibility, an obligation to make sure that the country lands. That is the obligation which is upon the Department of Education. The minister does. She has that. And the Director General is assisting. Director General, I'm not being personal, please. I hope you get me right. But then coming to the finances, honestly, what can you say? PPEs. How can you talk about, first of all, a rise from 80 of irregular expenditure from 80 to 800. What is that on earth? You know, the way this country got exploited, in particular through the PPEs, I've never seen the exploitation of this magnitude. One question then is maybe, which arises here, is this is criminal as well. Where are these people? Because some work has been done. I remember we have some reports. Some work has been done. People have been identified. Maybe some have even been suspended. But this is criminal. The sooner these people go behind bars, the better. But work must be done thoroughly in terms of raising all this mess, correcting all this mess. Chairperson, I want to end there. Like I said, there's nothing you can pick and leave here. Everything is bad. It's just bad. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Who's next? Is it Mashabela or Manches?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes.
And good morning, members. Chairperson, the RCD was introduced in 2011-2012, aimed at eliminating backlogs in school infrastructure. Has there been any meaningful improvement in terms of monitoring and accounting of infrastructure program? Is the first question, Chair. The second one, Chairperson. What was the conflict of interest identified in terms of Northwest teachers in relation to the supply of PPEs? And then lastly, I think the DPE should appraise the committee measures to be taken to recover the fruitless and wasteful expenditure as determined by Treasury regulation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Good morning, colleagues, and thank you to the department and also to the two presentations that you have received. I think I have been covered by most of the members who asked questions. I think it is quite concerning that, you know, year after year, we talk about the issue of infrastructure. And I think for me specifically, the issue of having still pit latrines and the fact that the norms and standards, the targets haven't been met yet. And yet the department was taken to court and asked to make this a priority. But, you know, as you can see, the wheels of the of this department are moving very slowly. With regard to, I think for me, my concern is what I brought in last week was the fact that, you know, we saw that there's a decline in maths and science registration by the learners. And I think it's primarily because of what you're saying. I'm going to look at, talk about science specifically. If you don't have labs, obviously you're not going to have an interest. But also, I think the department has to maybe reimagine a new way of looking at targets, because there's no way that you're going to be able to have labs and you know, laboratories in 2023. You're not going to meet that target. And for us to be sitting today and saying, like, you know, you're supposed to have met it, it's going to be one of those targets that you're going to fail at. But we need to kind of look at ways of having schools working together, like a school that already has laboratories that is functional, not only a lab, but a lab that is functional with all the reagents that that are required in a laboratory. Then that must collaborate with schools around that area, that they share that that laboratory. Because you cannot, definitely we won't be able to have learners, you know, having labs in the near future. And I don't actually know if it's something that we should make as a target. I don't think the department should be saying that labs should be laboratories and should be targets, even maybe A library would be something that has become very crucial. We are living in the 21st century, and I think we can be able to use videos. Schools can be able to use videos. They can use schools that are closer to them, go to the labs there, because most schools will use the lab once a week. If you have a class of science, I mean, you can see that, you know, we don't even have enough learners that you know, are enrolling for that subject. So I think we can look at maybe like how do we ensure that, like, you know, learners are exposed to the labs as they need, whenever they need it. Because if you look at also the reactions that we have, I was actually thinking that my son was telling me the other day that he went to Gray College and he's never been in a lab. So I think we need to, let's be realistic. Sometimes we look at these targets and we think, okay, that is something that we have to do. But, like, let's look at really if they are really achievable goals. At the same time, what is it that we can do in the meanwhile when we can't meet these goals? How can we be able to assist these learners? Because, you know, our children are constantly, I mean, last week I was appalled by Professor Vormick when he was saying that, like, you know, physics might not be as important, you know, math to some extent. Okay, now we need to, if that's the case, then we have to go back and see what is it that then we need to do? What are our priorities? If you're talking about the fourth industrial revolution, are these targets looking at this? Are we basically, like, you know, trying to move forward but yet going backward? So I don't know if you know, the targets can be revised to meet the needs of the fourth industrial revolution, or even of this century, for that matter. So I don't know, because like, you know, we talk about the same things over and over again, and we're unable to meet even the targets that that have been set. Some of the targets are very easy targets that are supposed to be manageable, like infrastructure. You have already a CD that was supposed to have been looking after infrastructure. You have EIG that was supposed to also receive the money for infrastructure, but yet we are unable to do that. I think a basic thing like a toilet and having water in a school, it brings so much dignity. It brings dignity to not only your teachers, but your learners. You know, they feel that they have a pride to a school to go to, and yet we are even not able to do that. And then now we have, you know, sports grounds that are targets that you're not meeting. The other issue that I'm having a problem with is the fact that budgets are allocated, but strangely enough, targets are not met, but budgets are being towed 98% of budget expenditure. But then when you look at the targets do not, they don't speak to the budget that has been allocated. So, I mean, obviously with that on its own is that like taxpayers will continuously be paying tax, expecting the government or this department to be able to meet these targets, but yet, you know, we are unable to do that. So for me, really, it's not even about, you know, really asking questions, but I think maybe if we are to maybe look, maybe the DG can tell me, can we re-look at the targets and maybe, you know, reimagine a new type of education system that can be more accessible. Our access to education shouldn't be just to say that we have people, you know, we have learners. I think the access means, you know, you can go to school up to some grade 4 or something like that. But we have to look beyond that to say that, you know, the type of education that we have, is it quality? Is it really quality education? Because that's what we need. Unfortunately, we are competing with the best in the world. So we cannot just be looking at, you know, say like, okay, you have access, you have done our job. You know, you have matric, and yet you're going to be staying at home with nothing to do when you're done with your matric. Matric means nothing. Is it something that you want to invest in to say that, you know, we're giving learners a matric certificate that is worth nothing? Because if we are not having subjects that really are a priority in terms of ensuring that our learners can be able to survive once they finish matric, it is good, yes, to have a higher education. But then if you can't, if you have no ability to do that for one reason or the other, it could be finance, it could be no interest, but basic education should be a door opener for you to be able either to start a business, either to go and work immediately when you finish that. So we have to really relook and say, like, you know, if we're already having graduates that are sitting at home, what are we doing as a basic education? What is it that we are doing to ensure that our learners really are capacitated? I think for me that is quite my issue at the end of the day, as much as we've seen that, you know, the AG is concerned, the norms and standards, they are looking bad in provinces like KZN and Eastern Cape, and also the fact that we have, we still don't have sports ground. It's like a pipe dream. It's like targets that have been there forever, but that will never be achieved. What is it that we are doing to make sure that at least there's access? It's one thing to say that we have a sports ground. Can we move our targets now to access to those sports grounds, to those libraries, to labs, instead of saying each and every school should have those facilities? Can we maybe rethink and say, like, you know, can we think about access to those as our targets? Thank you. Thank you, Chen.
Honorable Chabileng, I'm not sure if Honorable Chabileng has, we've lost Honorable Chabileng again. I don't see him on my list again.
We're missing him, Mr. Brown. He's not here. He's not online.
Your son is working for them, so that we can be able to proceed with the train, and all these validations will then follow in terms of checking the IDs if they are correct.
Is the whip of the select committee or the whip of the portfolio committee? Could we just continue until Honorable Chabileng has joined us again? Honorable Adwins, are you available?
I'm available, Mr. Brown. Thank you. Greetings to all the members, honorable members from National Assembly and NCOP, the department, the Office of the Auditor General, and the FFC. I see the hand of Honorable Baha, Honorable Dungeni, and Honorable Siwela, in that order. Honorable Mashezi, are you raising your hand or you did not lower your hand? Honorable Mashezi?
Chairperson, can we please also acknowledge Honorable Sukers, who would also like to ask a question. Thank you.
Okay, I don't see his hand, but it's fine. You'll follow Honorable Sukers. In that order, Honorable Baha, Ndongeni, Siwela, and Honorable Sukers.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I welcome the reports and the presentations as made by the two entities. But I think that for me, it's quite important to, firstly, the first question that I have is what plans are there to assist schools without infrastructural items like laboratories? How do we ensure that these schools are able to progress, but also in the form of having laboratories as they still do not have? But Chairperson, mainly where I want to be is more on the AG's report that has been presented. I think I'm with the other members in saying that it's kind of quite disturbing to find that, for an example, if my emphasis would be around the COVID-19 matters, where, you know, people were really in need, but, you know, kind of the whole matter has question marks in terms of monies that are asked in terms of it. For instance, Chairperson, the Eastern Cape overpaid suppliers in terms of PPEs. KZN overpaid, and the commitment is for the supplier to deliver more to the amount of 61,813 rands. Mpumalanga paid more than the standard amount of 28 rands for a mask. They bought 15,946 to additional 559,797, and this might be an irregular expenditure at some point. And also there's something that talks to the National Department as well, which has also kind of not stuck to what it's supposed to pay. Now, it's worrying, Chairperson, because you see, as we speak, we are talking about people who go on to get whatever 300 plus rands that they can get because they are not earning any salaries. And yet there are monies that are kind of used incorrectly. And for me, it's a huge problem that has to be kind of dealt with. I'm not sure how, but something must be done so that we become responsible individuals who look after the interests of the people, but also are able to assist people whenever there's a need to do so. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I'm just worried. I'm not sure how to deal with it at this point, but it's something that needs to be addressed, and we get to the end of it. If it means that people must be brought to book for doing wrong things, that must be done, including officials of the Departments of Education, if that is the case. Thank you, Chairperson.
In that order, Honorable Dongeni.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Thank you for the presentation. I just have only two or three questions. My question, what level of capacity building is provided to officials, especially in CFOs and accounting officers? My question is straight to AG. And then the second one is there any consequences against officials implicated in wrongdoing? Like they're supposed to go to get the report in time, but they doing the report late. I don't know. Is there any consequences? And then the last one, Chair, how are internal control systems strengthened? Because it means we have a problem here, and it's a big problem. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Suela.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. My greatest concern, though, just like, you know, we have budgets that are being spent, but the targets are not met. And in the budget spending also, you find issues that probably should be corrected or should be avoided, where people just spend more than they are supposed to spend, pay more than they are supposed to pay, while the regulations and the guiding notes are still there. It is as if people are doing these things deliberately, knowing very well that Parliament or the portfolio committee will just speak to these issues, talk to these issues, and there will be no action being taken against them. For instance, even in the DPE head office, people have paid more than what they were supposed to pay. Why is that the case? Is there no monitoring over that mechanism? What are all these structures that we are told are in place, the systems? Are they failing to detect these things and prevent it? Only the AG will come out and begin to pick up these things. We're talking about these things over and over again, and sometimes I feel that as parliamentarians, we just have to talk and talk, and the officials definitely take us for granted for that. At the end of the day, there's nothing that we can do. The other point that I wish to raise is with regards to the norms and standards. These things have been there for a very, very long time. Schools are supposed to have their toilets, schools are supposed to have sports facilities, and so forth. And by 2023, schools are supposed to have libraries. Even the things that were supposed to have been done up to today are not yet there. How sure are we that those libraries that are needed by 2023 will be there? If the government plans and executes actions, what is it that they are addressing if the issues that are stated in the norms and standards are not being addressed? So these are the things that perhaps the department, the PEs must actually engage themselves and do them as outlined in the norms and standards. If they are not addressing that, what exactly are they doing in the department? That is my problem. And why do you spend budget, 70% of the budget spent, but 46% of the work done? What did you spend the budget for? Thank you.
Honorable Suker.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to everyone. And I just want to say thank you to the presenters for the presentations that was made. I think I serve, Chair, on three committees. And
the sentiment expressed by all my colleagues here, if you receive these kinds of reports in terms of service delivery to the poorest of our people and the performance of departments, and you hear it in most of the committees that I serve on, the sentiment expressed by all members here, I think it is exhausting for public representatives. And I want to almost echo what was said by the last speaker that said, you know, are departments not taking public representatives seriously? Because why is it that we are over and over getting the same kind of reports? And so my questions are really going to be directed at the DBE in preparation for next week's meeting. South Africans cannot afford anymore to hear the kind of reports and lack of service delivery that they feel at the coalface. They cannot. We cannot afford it. So we are all in this together. And so the question then is, how do we improve functions of oversight? And the Department of Basic Education needs to give this committee an indication of what is the appetite for change in the department and what are those changes going to be. There is a desperate need for us to change the way we do things. And I want to ask, what are the oversight mechanisms that we can put in place from the Department of Basic Education right down to our SGBs and districts in order for us to improve oversight and ensure that we have better service delivery to our people? And we need that question to be answered at all levels, actually. There are many challenges that the department has brought to us last year already, around a city. And we then, in that portfolio committee meeting, asked the DBE to improve the relationships between communities, with communities, in this way that how do we link what is being done in terms of economic empowerment and poverty alleviation, as an example, with the NDA, the National Development Agency, that works on the ground to empower businesses, women-owned businesses or youth businesses. How do you link the services, the economic empowerment programs with the service delivery programs of the DBE? I asked that question specifically to the DBE. So I'm going to ask it again. How do we improve so that there is no delays with water tanks? In the beginning of COVID-19, there was a report on water tanks that was delayed because communities opposed it because they had no stake in it. The same with the CD in KZN and in the Eastern Cape. There was this report that there is delays, there's opposition because of communities not having a stake. So what is the DBE doing to link a city program, infrastructure build program, with other poverty alleviation and economic empowerment programs in order to ensure that such delays at that level at least can be avoided? Secondly, I want to also go back. I want to thank the presenter again for speaking on inclusive education and what is being done for learners with special needs. This was also highlighted last year, Chair. And we asked then, the chairperson for the National Assembly asked for the portfolio committee and the NA, asked the department to prepare a report for this committee on inclusive education. We have not received that report. So in anticipation for our meeting with the DBE next week, can the department please provide us with a brief around where they are in terms of that? Then also, I want to just ask the department, I'm asking these questions so that we don't have the same issue that we had last week's in the portfolio committee, where the department says that they cannot give us the data. I want to ask the department as well in terms of the the quintile question that I've asked before. Parents of learners from working and struggling middle-class families in quintile 4 and quintile 5, and I've seen this in oversight as well, have been negatively impacted by COVID-19 and are struggling with paying school fees. How can we aid them? And the need, and with this, we are again emphasizing what Machezi has said around, Honorable Machezi, around innovation. The lack of innovation, we cannot look at what we have, Chair. We don't have enough money. We know that. We can see that. The little money that we do have, we are not managing well. And it's causing this frustration. And not just frustration, it leads actually to people burning down schools and burning down infrastructure, because the level of anger at the ground level with this kind of what we see in figures on the ground, people are sick and tired of having, you know, a lack of service delivery. So can we ask the department, please, to provide us with just an answer on that? I don't know if I just lost my train of thought, and I apologize. So I'm asking about the quintile 4 and 5 schools, and what are the what can be done innovatively in order for us to address the challenges that are before us, because we need to look at things differently. So we need to innovate. We need to look at oversight differently. We need to look at how do we engage with our communities differently so that we improve ownership and buy-in into what it is that we want to achieve. And the Department of Basic Education needs to provide us with that, Chairperson. And I'm done with that. Thank you. And I just want to say thank you again for the report.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm reconnected again. Yes.
No, thank you. Can I then raise my question since I'm not sharing anymore? I was
excited. Okay, you may raise your...
Okay, no, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join the queue and appreciate the reports that we received in this meeting, and also I would not shy away from the challenges that were raised by my honorable colleagues, but Chair, with the facts that were presented to us, it seems as if DBE nationally it performs better than provinces on the report of the AG that we got, even the FFC, on their performance on the expenditure, they were underspending provinces. But when it comes to DBE, I think it performs better than the provinces. Then my question would, even if it's not a question, but maybe we should take that there's something better that the DBE is doing than the provinces. And maybe at some point we should look and zoom into that to say what is it that their internal controls, they are far much better than those of provinces. And what is it that we can take from DBE and implement in provinces? Because honestly, I understand when members are saying the targets are not met, but for a certain stage we adopt their quarterly reports that shows that the targets of the entity has been met. So it's something that we as members we really need to look deeper into that and try to get what is best on what the work that has been done and really my other challenge is on the effectiveness of the audit committee, whether internal or the audit committee itself. It has that silent mode that we don't hear whether their views or their reports in the work that has been done. Even though we get the quarterly reports from the departments with some of the work that has been done at the level of the audit committee, but I think we need to to get more information or more reports on their effects. We lost you, Comrade Dadons. Audit committee before even the audit of the year.
Chairperson, can you save the sinking boat?
I'm muted. I don't know why.
Honorable Dadons, we can hear you well now. I think we just need to continue because I think we may have lost Honorable Ntshavheleng again. I think, yeah.
No, it's fine. Thank you, Mr. Brown. I don't know. No, it's fine. As I was saying, the challenges with this infrastructure, it's something that as a committee also we need to zoom into, because there are so many challenges that were raised by the department itself. If it's not the communities or stakeholders themselves disrupting projects, it is those the ones that are supposed to, or service providers that are not performing. So I think we really need to zoom into that. And also we must couple it with the challenge of vandalism, because we see there's a lot of schools, as Honorable Van der Walt has mentioned, about more than 1.5 schools that have been vandalized. And some is not even once or twice, some it's more than 10 times. So there's a lot of money and resources that are lost in the process. So it's also something that really needs us to work together and really find solutions. And the issue of maintenance to school properties and its infrastructure, it's something that provinces really need to account, because at some point we received the report that the provinces are being requested to budget or to put in their budget maintenance budget for their infrastructure. But if it's not happening, what's supposed to happen? Who's supposed to account? Because you cannot just leave it open and say so-and-so supposed to account. Then if they are not accounting, then what? I think we really need to be harsh and work as a collective to make sure that all these things are met, because they've been going on and on for a long time, and it's a vicious cycle that doesn't end. When the school is a new school that is being built, it will be vandalized by the community. It's something that it doesn't end. So at some point, we really need to deal with that, because it also put the lives of the learners and teachers at risk. It really needs to be addressed. On the issue of provinces, we have started engaging with provinces, and I think we're starting to see, observe fruits on our engagement with provinces directly, because we have not done that in the past, but at least now we get more. Information, we get more clarity and more sense that all the money or chunk of the money is transferred to provinces for them to implement and run districts, substances, and schools. And at some point, in improving our education system, we really need to ask ourselves, when we say all these bad and gloom things about the education, how did we arrive at where we are today? We have doctors, we have professionals, we have the office of the AG, we have young people that are being that are educated. How do we take that and say, how did we, take stock and say, this is what we have done as a country, maybe from whether 1994 up until today, we have so many professionals, we have achieved so much. What is the challenge with not reaching the other young people to also do better? I think at some point we really need to have those kind of engagement, because just to say that we need to improve without really talking about the know-how or the how part of it is not going to assist us. We really need to talk to facts and be honest to say, this is what we have as a country, and this is what we want to achieve. And this the way we are going to achieve it, how part of it, we have to really talk about it, because I think it is important that as the sixth parliament, we also know what it is that we want to achieve on the issue of delivering basic education to our learners or to our children. Let me pause there for now, but allow the department, the office of the AG, and who else to respond? DG, can you?
The FFC.
Oh, and the FFC. Okay, all right. The FFC to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Should I start?
Yes, DG.
Yeah. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The first point that I need to make is that I fully appreciate and accept the way the honorable members feel. As lawmakers, they have to be extremely unhappy about some of the things that have been presented. And when it comes to the department, I take full responsibility because I occupy the position of an accounting officer. So I have no choice but to accept that and continue to commit, as I have done before, that we do take very serious what the honorable members are raising with us. And I'm sure that it's just that some of the things are unpardonable, and they really made members of both Select and the Portfolio Committee extremely unhappy, especially when it comes to non-compliance with laws and policies. And I fully agree with that observation. And indeed, what we need to do, there must be consequences. And honorable members have held us accountable on that if there has been non-compliance, we have to show consequences. What are the consequences? The report presented by the Auditor General, maybe from honorable members, because some of the things make them unhappy. In the past, we're even lagging behind in carrying out investigations, which are led by an investigation committee, which is led by the head of the internal audit of the department. But the report presented today said, we have carried out most, if not all, investigations, and there are consequences that have been meted out. Let me just isolate one matter that relates to overcharging on the procurement of COVID essentials with respect to DBE. The colleagues from the AG will agree with me that the explanation given even by National Treasury was even saying that there's nothing irregular about the transaction. But I have issued an instruction for an investigation, because despite the fact that, the relevant unit at National Treasury was saying you have procured through PPP, and PPP does not necessarily have to comply to the benchmark issued by National Treasury. I didn't accept that, because my view was that Treasury can't issue a benchmark and then say some people cannot comply with it. And we've gone further. The internal audit has investigated the matter, and I've been looking at the report with a view of finalizing it. We've received a preliminary report. The officials involved also afforded the opportunity to state their side of the story. So that's the extent to which we take matters of procurement of PPE serious. We understand the mood out there, and we also understand the feeling of public representatives in Parliament, both in the NCOP and the National Assembly. And we are aligned to that. There's no other way. Where we have not followed the rules, there must be consequences, and we must report to oversight structures of Parliament on consequences that have been meted out. I do not wish, I've written all the comments and questions asked, but in the interest of time, I might not be able to respond to all of them. I might just want to offer my humble comment on the presentation made by particularly the FFC. Honorable Machesi is right. Contemporary view on facilities in education has changed quite fast. Instead of four walls of laboratories science and other laboratories, we provide science kits because schools are being vandalized. I mean, if they are vandalized, consumables are going to be taken away. So a science kit, you can lock it up elsewhere. Secondly, we're using what we call virtual labs. And Honorable Machesi gave an example of her son. Many schools don't really use your old traditional laboratories. They use virtual labs, which you can run electronically on digital platform. And many of our schools can do that. If you provide tablets and other devices to learners, they can run experiments virtually instead of running them from your traditional labs. Maybe the interaction between us and the FFC to get to understand on how we have moved on some of these things, although, of course, I accept that they were part of the targets that would have been set in norms and standards and so on. But given the situation as it moved, we've moved away from them. For instance, your libraries, you use multimedia. Multimedia doesn't have to be four walls. Multimedia you also get on a digital platform and other means that you're able to provide to schools. And maybe the issue of, we have presented to the portfolio committee a very comprehensive report on inclusive education. And we are willing to come back and do that. And in my view, we've presented progress on the implementation of White Paper 6, which progress report has always been comprehensive, and we've always been commended by the current and previous portfolio committees and select committees on the progress that we have made in terms of inclusive education. I do not believe that you need a separate legislation to bring into effect a framework for norms and standards for learners with special education needs. South African Schools Act provides for both. And if you come up with a new legislation, what becomes of the South African Schools Act? Because South African Schools Act provides for that. The only thing is that there's been a delay in finalizing a framework for norms and standards for learners with special education needs, which I concede we need to move fast and make sure that we finalize that framework. Training on CS, I mean, there's data on that, how many teachers have been trained per province, even up to even district level. Training teachers on education of learners with special education needs, that data is available. Funza Lushaka and other funding that we provide to teachers to make sure that we get more and more teachers who are really qualified in this area. And that information could be available. And quickly, Honorable Member, that is in terms of the FFC. I really respect the work that they do, Commissioner Rockman and Sasha. And I think we need to interact much more to compare notes in terms of the wonderful work that you are doing. But thank you for confirming the point that I made, that with the advent of the EIG and ACD, provinces have retracted from allocating funds from equitable share for infrastructure. And that matter has not been adequately addressed, particularly by the select committee of the NCOP, because my view is that they are best placed to take provinces on that matter. It's safe to say there are only two provinces, Western Cape and Gauteng, that allocate about 36% and 24%, which is also inadequate, because it is not the mandate of a national department to deliver infrastructure, even in the constitution, in terms of concurrent functions. But we landed in this space because we had no option. The minister would be cited in all litigation that is directed at provinces. And I'm happy Honorable Adunz also just reminded honorable members that provinces have been coming to account, particularly on how procurement of PPEs have gone. And I think that must continue. It should not only end with this. And I think their engagement with our portfolio committee and the select committee helps to share more light on what has happened, what are the remedial measures. And of course, I would accept that as the business executive of the AG correctly observed, that emergency procurement of COVID essentials has exposed some of the weaknesses in our internal controls, but has also exaggerated those weaknesses, both at national and provincial level, by the way. And I must also again, Honorable van der Walt, remind the committee that Honorable van der Walt, in one of the meetings, observed when we said that we're no longer allocating projects to KUGA, we are no longer allocating projects to IDT, simply because they cost us too many findings, including irregular expenditure. And the irregular expenditure that is referred to here, it's in implementing agents who are not complying with the law. And Honorable van der Walt said, the more you take action even against contractors, eventually you'll have no contractors that you are going to use. Now this year, not so long ago, about 2 weeks ago, we have taken away projects from the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries. 116 schools where they needed to provide sanitation, we've taken them away. Another implementing agent is out. And as we go by, we'll have no implementing agent to use to implement our project, because they are either causing us findings or they are delaying in the delivery of projects. The issue of infrastructure delivery in South Africa is much bigger than basic education. The line function department, Public Works, is unable to perform, is receiving, the live wire resuscitation from the presidency. And we have a problem with infrastructure delivery in terms of capacity. It's a real problem, honorable members. And almost, we try on teaching and learning, now the biggest problem is becoming infrastructure. We are unable to fully focus on teaching and learning. We now have to occupy myself 80% with infrastructure. The next thing, there are no outcomes in teaching and learning, because I'm going to spend more time and energy, the minister and the deputy minister, even this morning from 7:30, the meeting was about infrastructure, not about teaching and learning. Now, I want to be woefully honest. There is a problem here, and it's not only in basic education, it's not only in the national department, even at provincial. There are serious capacity issues around field industry, involving the line function department. Maybe that's why the president is getting involved. And I'm saying this irregular, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it comes from them. And the instruction that I gave from the CFO, I had requested that he must give us an update on how much we have recovered in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And of course, the issue of irregular expenditure, where we're asking even implementing agents to take action against their own employees who are involved in transactions that led to irregular expenditure. So I think I must say that, as I said in my initial comment, that I understand the frustration, I understand the extreme unhappiness, and I take full responsibility when it comes to basic education, and we'll only try and do our best, to address some of these issues. We've brought in additional capacity in the line function of infrastructure. I must say the AG would have indicated our last audit report, we had 5 findings. This audit report of 2019-2020, the findings have now been reduced from 5 to 2. And my view was that what we should do is to go to a clean report. That's where we should go. We are now left with 2 audit findings, as indicated, irregular expenditure, and the other one relates to capital projects. So we are determined to move. In fact, when it comes to audit outcomes, some of the provinces are doing much better than we do. For instance, I mean, some have, a number have got unqualified, and unqualified audit reports with some findings and so on. We would want to move to a clean audit report so that we become exemplary to all other provinces. And that's the target that we have set for ourselves, and we need to move in that direction. So, Honorable Ngobo, I really accept what you have said. We really need to do better. But I also want to just explain. KZN, Mpumalanga, I've forgotten the other province, there are 3, which are allocating below the threshold determined nationally. They cover more learners than Gauteng and Western Cape. Poor learners in those, they have, quintile 1 to 3 schools, 80 up to 90%, when Gauteng and Western Cape would have a maximum of only 60%. So even though they don't meet the quantum of the threshold, they cover more. They cover more schools, cover more learners. It might be that they don't meet the required threshold, but they cover more schools and more learners. I just want that must be taken into account. And maybe part of the reason why they are unable to meet the norm is because they've got more poor learners and more schools that are, designated as quintile 1 to 3 schools as compared to even Western Cape and Gauteng. So I want that to be taken into account. And to the FFC, I've indicated that the minister has written letters to MECs, several letters, to indicate to them they've not met the nationally determined threshold in terms of the norms, and requesting them to correct that, and even further indicate that they need to communicate with her as to when are they going to correct that. The response has been that provinces have been squeezed. Money has been taken away from them, and as a result, they are unable to meet the norms. And provinces respond differently. Others will take money elsewhere. Others will take it, especially those that have more schools and more learners. They will then reduce the amount instead of reducing the number of schools and learners. My view is that it's better that, I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, instead of reducing the number of schools and learners who benefit, you could rather provide slightly less and then still provide for more learners and more schools, unlike what is happening in Gauteng and even Western Cape. But ideally, all of them should be able to meet the threshold. And Honorable Mashabela, well, conflict of interest, the way, and I think Northwest did appear before the portfolio committee, what they explained is that conflict of interest are people who had companies that provided PPEs in municipalities. Employees did not do business with the department. They went to do business with government. But the legislation is very clear. No public servant is allowed to do business with government at whatever level. And therefore, what Northwest was waiting for was the AG to give them details so that they are able to follow this up. And this is being dealt with at the labor relations section of the department, and they even want to take it further than that. That's what was provided by Northwest in terms of the conflict of interest. We do have a case at VBE. Somebody was involved with the Second Chance Program. Is an employee at provincial level, but when it came to provision of some goods and services, that person's name appeared in a company. The person is in the Free State. We are taking up that matter with the Free State Department of Education for consequence management against that employee. So, Honorable Mashabela, that's the explanation that I would offer there. Honorable Machesi, well, decline in math and science numbers is proportional to the decline in the enrollment. Maybe that explanation was not provided last week. It's not out of kilter. There is no indication that the decline in math and science, and I've indicated that we provide science kits. In the majority of instances, we have moved away from your four walls of labs. As you correctly pointed out, we also use virtual labs and so on. I agree with you that given the explanation that you have given and what I've given, we need to relook at our targets because what it means then is that what appears in norms and standards for school infrastructure it would be targets that will not be able to meet. With respect, Honorable Machesi, I do think that the matric certificate has got immense value. The fact that neighboring countries are even requests such as Swaziland, they've got a special agreement with us. They've got centers that are writing national senior certificate and other neighboring countries that are sending learners to South Africa or even writing, it says that this has got value. I do accept that there are candidates who are sitting at home, but it's got to do with market issues more than just education, which happens all over the world. If the market is such that it doesn't absorb those who have been produced by institutions of education, and there's a lot that we need to do to also make sure that we stimulate the market to be receptive to those who are produced. Honorable Baha, I've responded to the issue of laboratories. We provide science kits, and also teaching happens through virtual labs. And the other thing is that I've indicated that all provinces that we interacted with, consequences are being meted out to those who are involved in irregularities with regard to the procurement of COVID essentials. Officials have been suspended. Disciplinary hearings are being carried out, and as well as the relevant actions in this regard. And Honorable Dongeni, I think this is for the AG. What I can say is that we planned a workshop with the AG on the 9th of November. We fully accept the findings of the AG. I think for the first time in the past, we would differ and fight. We don't differ. We agree with the findings of the AG, and we are going to have a workshop to help to strengthen our internal control environment so that come next time, at least we're able to put a smile on the portfolio committee and the select committee. Honorable Siwela, I've indicated that we take serious what you raise with us. And I've explained the issue of targets to norms and standards for school infrastructure. Honorable Sukers, same. We do take you serious, quite honestly. We'll be in trouble if we don't take you serious. appetite for change. I'm sure I've indicated what we are trying to change. And there's going to be drastic changes as well as a result of particularly this report of the AG. We're going to effect more changes. We're going to strengthen infrastructure even more. We are removing implementing agents that are making it difficult for us to do our work, to either deliver or causing us audit findings. I'm more than willing, Honorable Sukir, just tell us when we should bring this report, or the committee must tell us. We'll put it together. The report on inclusive education will bring it to give progress on the implementation of White Paper 6. Parents who are struggling, quintile 4 and 5, school fee exemption policy remains, and such parents would be accommodated in terms of the school fee exemption policy. Honorable Adun's audit committees, in terms of our audit committee, quite honestly, I think they're really doing their best. But these are in the main outside people. They offer advices. If we don't implement advices that they are giving us, there's very little that they can do. They are not here 24 hours, at least 5 days a week. And I think we've got one of the most experienced and effective audit committee. Some of the improvements that we have made are attributable to the work. The same applies to the internal audit directorate. In other departments, our size should even be bigger, but I think even the AG can attest to the fact that they are definitely doing their best. Engagement with, but Honorable Sukir, I've also taken the advice. We're trying to do that, work with communities, other poverty alleviation programs, which is not easy. Departments are very compartmentalized. In the public service, it's essentially about your performance agreement and so on. So it's not always easy to work in a very integrated way. But I think we'll continue to implement and work with other departments to take your advice forward. Challenges of infrastructure, Honorable Adunz, I think you've made the correct observation. I think, Honorable Chair, I've really tried. I might have not done justice, and Honorable Ntshavheleng has also raised his dissatisfaction, especially around non-compliance with policies and legislation. I've indicated that there'll definitely be consequences in that respect. Investing in teacher training, we do. Not as fast as we should, but we do Funza Lushaka and other bazaaries. But the problem is that math and science teachers, South African math and science teachers, are in demand elsewhere. We provide, because other countries are paying in terms of currency more than we do, in Canada, in Qatar, in the UK, and elsewhere. And many of them, because of the vast differences in our currency vis-a-vis the currencies of those countries, they are prepared to go there. Apart from that, we also lose them to the private sector. That's the challenge that we have. We continue to produce them, but they get absorbed in the private sector. But we'll also elaborate more on these issues next week when we meet with the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DGK. Can we try to wrap up? We don't have time left. We're supposed to be done at 12 o'clock. It's 28 past 12. Can I hand over to the FFC and then the AG will follow right after that?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Commissioner Rockman. I'll be very brief. I think it's clear to all of us that, and we appreciate the fact that education is a very complex and a very dynamic sector to deal with. And the challenges are there, and there are plenty, but they're also not insurmountable. It just needs our focus to chart the way forward. I think what is important is that if we have expanded the scope of our understanding of norms and standards. We need to formalize it and update our targets accordingly, because then a different picture might also start emerging on alternative measures than the traditional concept that we all know of what is a lab and what is a library and so forth. So we need to move with the times and update our norms and standards, and the subsets of data that we require is also important. And maybe FFC and Department of Basic Education can further engage on that. It will be very interesting to see what other patterns then start emerging. I think the emphasis is that we need to reach a point where we are able to evaluate and assess our progress based on sufficient data. And certainly with the RCD program and probably many of the other implementing agents, enough time has lapsed to give us an objective view on whether this is a service delivery model that works or not. And in these times that we are facing with not only COVID-19, but our other problems of the slow economic growth, increasing poverty and inequality, we need to take a step back and say, but if it doesn't work, then what else? And I think that stage has been reached. There's interesting discussions on inclusive education that I think FFC and DBE should also further pursue, because inclusive education was a specific area of research in our latest annual submission on Division of Revenue. I think we would like to pursue that engagement. When it comes to whether the policy paper should translate into legislation, I think the portfolio and the select committees have a definite role to play, and they also need to apply their minds to that part of it. So if we are able to further assist either the committee or the department with further research, we will be glad to offer that assistance within the mandate that we have, that if those recommendations would affect the vision of revenue or other fiscal and financial matters. But thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. I don't know if Sasha wants to add.
Thanks, Commissioner Rockman. I think you have largely covered me. I was going to make the comment about perhaps updating the names with some of the progress that the DG was referring to. But other than that, thank you, I'm covered.
Thank you, Chair. Then I'll hand back to you.
AG.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think from our side, the DG had made a couple of commitments in relation to the things that we raised, and I think the matter that the members raised as well, so I'll not go into that space. But I would like to respond to a question that was raised in terms of, are we reflecting and auditing the central system, procurement system, that the Free State is utilizing for the benefit of the whole province? Yes, we are. And we're hoping to share the observations as part of the second report. And you will also note that Free State would not have been the only province in that space, although other provinces would have done a partial centralization. For an example, if you take Gauteng, they did not have their own contract as basic education. They were utilizing, or rather the procurement was undertaken by Department of Health in that province, and so was Limpopo. So if you take the AGSA special COVID report that we tabled on the 2nd of December, we have quite observations around Gauteng Department of Health that would impact education, and would also have the observations on in Limpopo in the Department of Health that would also impact the Department of Education. So yes, we are hoping to bring those observations as part of the second report, primarily based on the Free State centralization of procurement. There was also a comment to say, are we going to get a report on this remedial action that the accounting officers have committed to? Yes, it is one key focus area for the second report, for us to follow up on the promises that the accounting officers would have made, so that we're able to make a clear distinction of the provinces that have taken the matters forward and those that may have not necessarily have enhanced the internal control process. I think there was also a question, rather a comment around the capacitation, and I think the capacitation remains the primary responsibility of the department itself, with an appreciation that the people that have been brought on the system, they are professional in their own right, and therefore there's a certain expertise that they're expected to have as and when they join the department. But in addition to that, from our side, and as the AGSA, as part of the audit process, we do take conversations and we do engage at large in terms of what we think can work better. And I think to the point that the DG had made with regard to the workshop we're intending to have with the management of the DBE, we continue on those mechanisms to just try and support government in their endeavor to strengthen the environment. Really, in closure, Chairperson, the key message that we are driving from our side is the preventative controls. We are asking all our auditees, DBE included, that you make sure that the control environment prevents any loopholes that may just become an incentive for an outsider to take advantage of you, or also internal people not to do what they're supposed to be doing. And therefore, we say, instead of investing a lot of efforts and energies in recovering the money and also taking a lot of consequences, procedures, you're almost better off by just ensuring that these things do not occur in the first place, because then you have a better chance of facilitating service delivery on a very strong control mechanism that will enable you to achieve what you intended to achieve. But that is just from our side, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much to all the responses, DBE, FFC, and the Office of the AG. Members, those are the responses. Are you clear? Are you satisfied? We don't have time. We don't have luxury of time. Is there any follow-up, or can we pause here?
Maybe one short one, Chairperson.
Very short, less than 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's going to be short. Very little was said about Northern Cape, Gauteng, on the Auditor General's report, the preliminary report in any case. Northern Cape, Gauteng, Western Cape, and Limpopo. She's only touching Limpopo now when she talks about centralized procurement. I want us to go out of this meeting with one understanding. Is it because they have performed better, or is it because they have not been visited during the oversight? Thank you.
AG?
Thank you so much. It is really not so much about performance. Gauteng, similar to Limpopo, it is primarily because they did not have any procurement processes attached to them as the basic education, but all the procurement was done by health, and therefore in our consolidated report that is available for the committee, we can also share again, we are reflecting a lot on the Department of Health procurement, which would have benefited the Limpopo and Gauteng. For Northern Cape, the work was still very much in progress at the point of reporting on the 3rd of September. We're hoping to do a much more bigger observation, so bring bigger observations as part of the second report. So it's really not about performance. It was just about the focus that we had in our first report. Thank you, Jay.
Okay, I thank you very much, Office of the AG. I'm sure you are okay now, Principal. Members,
yeah, thank you very much, sir. I'm covered.
All right. Mr. Brown, can we wrap up now, or is there another time that we can
other
items?
No, Chairperson. The other item would have been a set of minutes, but those minutes we can deal with at the next meeting, because that was just for the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. And then we still have to deal with another set, but we can do that at the next meeting, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Let me then take this opportunity to appreciate and thank all the members that presented from the Office of the AG, the FFC, and also
DBE led by the DG. Thank you very much. It was a very fruitful session. And I think we will also improve on, as a committee, on be empowered in doing our oversight, as we are now going to deliberate on those reports. Thank you very much. I'm sure as and when we need your assistance, we you are just a phone call away. We will be always to get hold of you and engage with you as and when we need information. Without wasting any time, can I allow you to leave the meeting before, and then we leave members to wrap up and close the meeting. Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, AG, and also the FFC.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, AG team and the FFC team. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
DG, go and vote in America. You will tell us whom do you want to vote. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm a South African.
He's a South African. Marwa said, what's wrong with you?
South African and an African, Honorable Murat said. I have nothing to do with American stuff.
At least you know where you go. Chairperson, are we still alive?
Oh, sorry. Yes, sorry. I was muted again. I was saying, can we then agree to deal with the minutes in the next meeting? And also, there was a proposal by Honorable Sugars that we need to get an update on the inclusive education. Can you also agree to Mr. Brown to look for an opening? When can we deal with that report and request the department to come and present? Can you agree on that one?
I am agreeing. I support 100%. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngobo. Thank you very much to all the honorable members. Can we then adjourn and meet in our next meeting? It's on Friday, Mr. Brown, with the provincial department.
Yes, Chairperson. Yes, on Friday we will have the Mpumalanga PED on the impact of COVID. But there's one other issue that we'll be dealing with. It's a petition from Ms. Matebe in the Northern Cape. So we'll have the Northern Cape and Ms. Matebe in that meeting on Friday after Mpumalanga.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Can you allocate us a little bit more time so that we deal with the two sets of minutes then?
I will do so, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, members, Mr. Brown, the meeting stand adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. I will see you in the session.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I will be in...